This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling.
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola. Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire. Produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Aural. A-U-R-A-L. What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Winston's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course, as the lacrosse player. Bismarck. No, wasn't it? Bismarck, wasn't it?
Liz Mark.
No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen-size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the fix.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what
you're
doing.
Our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richard. I love bad bitches, that's my fucking problem. And yeah, I like the fuck, I got a fucking problem. I love bad bitches, that's my fucking problem. And yeah, I like the fuck, I got a fucking problem. If finding somebody real is your fucking problem,
bring your girls to the crib, maybe we can solve it. Yeah, this the finale. Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to get you live here inside the PTB Man Cave. And it is time to, I guess maybe in a way, put a bow on what's been a eventful week, and that is WrestleMania 30 week. And PlaceToBeNation.com, we had tons of WrestleMania-based stuff for you. And here tonight, that continues with quite the event to chat about. And last time we talked about a WrestleMania, Scott Criscola, it was one of our most epic episodes of all time at WrestleMania 17. Here we are now a year later, the invasion's behind us, and this kind of weird new transition era is in front of us. And it's a very interesting show and one with a lot to get to throughout it.
Absolutely. Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 304 of the Place to Be podcast. And it's been a very eventful weekend for us at Place to Be Nation. We've had some great articles and some great pieces. Of course, we had our podcast Monday night with you, me, and Aaron George talking, recapping Hall of Fame and Mania. You can check out the Raw recap done by my very good friend, our good friend, and managing editor Brad Woodling, as my dish on the roof here is hanging by two threads. I knew eventually, JR, though, I was kind of crossing my fingers all winter that, you know, this winter that you and I have lived through was an absolute disaster. And I knew eventually, I mean, I've had no issues with my dish in the 10 years I've had DirecTV. And I knew this winter was going to be the time. And you know, I was watching some games on Saturday and I could see pixelating. I'm like, oh, this is more often usually for bad weather. And it was beautiful on Saturday. And then all of a sudden, goop, it disconnected. And I went to DirecTV, looked up the problem, and it says it's a disconnection. It's not the receiver's not reading the dish.
Right.
And I've done the steps that you're supposed to do, and if it's not doing it, then call them. And they're saying, yeah, you might have something on your roof, might have disconnected a cable or something. So, but they can't come till Saturday, so I could not do Raw last night. So I thank Brad Woodling for doing Raw, the Raw recap. He did an excellent job. I was watching a little bit of it today on Hulu Plus, which they hacked the crap out of. They hack it down to an hour and a half. But anyway, Place to Be Nation, you're home for everything WrestleMania this weekend, and we're wrapping it up tonight, looking back at a show, JR, that might be very similar to Sunday night in New Orleans in a lot of ways. Let's open the door, see if he's – I never see him when he's
hey,
got –
Hey, what is going on here?
What did I tell you about the nacho chips? I'm going to have to talk to my man Steven Sutton about that. I'm supposed to clean the nacho chips. Well – tonight on the Place to Be podcast, inside the Vintage Vault, very simply, icon versus icon.
One epic encounter. Do you people want to see the immortal Hulk Hogan go one-on-one with the Great One?
That no one could have imagined.
A match
reality. Hollywood Hogan.
What makes you think you're even in my league?
The Rock.
The matchup that will determine who will go down in history as being the absolute best ever.
WrestleMania. Next, live on pay-per-view.
And live here on the Place to Be podcast.
That is right. Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault, we bring you WrestleMania 18. Or for you Attitudeers, X8.
Is that like kids that were born during this time? The
Yeah, exactly, yes.
Attitudeers.
Attitudeers. All right. And definitely a show that I wouldn't say it's debated, but this is one of those manias, JR, that probably are different people have different opinions. Some say this show is really good. Some say the show is carried by one match. Some people say the whole show sucks. It all depends on your point of view. Very differing in opinions, but we'll break it down tonight and tell you what we think.
Mm-hmm.
Because we both think that very similar to what we saw on Sunday night in New Orleans. March 17th, 2002, live from the Sky Dome in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Two things here, JR. Number one, the earliest WrestleMania ever to this point. We've never had a Mania earlier than March 17th. That record will be broken 2 years later. Number two, third time in history that we have a repeat building in WrestleMania. Well, fourth time, actually. We have two at Madison Square Garden, two at Trump Plaza Hotel and Casino, two at the Pond, and now two here. Which begs an interesting question, which we'll talk about another day, about will they ever repeat again? I don't think so. But
I do. You think they'll never go back to any of the ones they've been to? Like, you don't think they'd ever go back to MetLife or Citrus Bowl or...
Citrus Bowl they make. I don't know. I feel like they want to christen so many new places, and it seems like places are always opening.
I can't imagine a scenario where they don't go back to MetLife at some point.
No, I don't think. Yeah, you might be right. Maybe 39 or 40, maybe. And it has been 12 years, JR, since the last time we were in this building for pay-per-view, and it was where your fandom began. Right here in this building, Sky Toronto, 12 years earlier.
And there's a lot of tie-ins to that show that we'll get to as we move along. And one major one that I always thought was kind of cool that we'll talk about. So I thought this was really the first Mania that felt like an event. Whereas, you know, 17 was the first one that felt like we're in the big dome and it was the culmination of these angles and it was a bloated show. We're out of the arena. 18 to me is where it became... the prototype for what it is today. We have a bunch of concerts throughout this thing. We have a couple bands that play. It was built up to be more of like a big extravaganza as opposed to just the culmination of the wrestling year. And we even opened the show with a performance from Saliva performing Superstar. And we get a kind of a video with all different highlighting all the feuds and WrestleMania's past as they're playing the song. So it was kind of a cool way to actually set up the matches with video clips, but very interesting. And it was kind of cool, too, because I felt like at the time, both watching on TV and in the arena, there wasn't much backlash to this. So I don't know if because it was kind of new, maybe it was kind of unique. Saliva was, I guess, kind of hot at the time. I don't know.
Oh, they were. No, they were definitely hot at the time.
So that was very interesting at the time. And also, I thought the arena looked great here. I thought the crowd was hot right out of the gate.
Yep.
I liked the set. And also, Scott, you mentioned the date, St. Paddy's Day, March 17th. So at Assumption College, we were rocking this one. We had our black box still hanging on, like your DirecTV. I think we had one channel left, and it was this one. So we had a big party in our dorm, room 6C. We had... of course, celebrating both St. Patrick's Day and WrestleMania, and a lot of interest in this one because of Hogan. So we had a pretty packed room, and I remember everyone going pretty crazy. We'll talk about it as we move along. Pretty historical, though. Last WrestleMania as the WWF. Last pre kind of split, which we'll get to next week. Mania, kind of the real end of an era. Last WrestleMania with one announced team for a long time. Kind of the official end of an era in many ways. We always look at 17 and 19. Like that, and now we're looking at 18 kind of as 18 always seems like a weird bridge one, but it's also, if you look at it, like I said, kind of this in between, end of an era, but not really the start of a new one kind of thing,
right? Which happens to have an epic match, right in the middle of it,
yes,
as it's a bridge show. Your attendance, a Sky Dome record 68,237, great crowd And we'll talk about that as we move forward. Fantastic crowd on that night. Your buy rate, pretty bloated as always for WrestleMania, 1.68. Mm-hmm. And your announcers, good old JR Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler.
So it's funny, too, because one last anecdote. So this is the year I was, first semester I ran the TV station and did the news, as you've seen some of the stuff.
Yes, I have.
Second semester, I was still heavily involved. I wasn't running it, but me and Chrisley Burr cut up video. We recorded the show and cut up video, like, the next day. Mm-hmm. And on that week's episode of ACTV, we ran a video package with Chris doing the voiceovers of the results and all these clips. We thought it came awesome. We're like, wow. We had the music underneath. It was a great video package. So it aired once. And I got yanked by the director or the professor that was in charge of the station, saying, guys, you basically illegally watched the show, recorded it illegally, and then edited the clips and are showing them inter-school TV here. Probably not the best idea for business. So
yeah, you broke about 17 million laws. So yeah,
so it aired once. I have the original. I have it on the original airing because I used to tape the original airing. So I do have it in its entirety. And there's one cool shot we did, which I'll talk about later. But I always thought that always made me laugh, thinking back how kind of naive we were to do that, thinking, oh yeah, well, we recorded it legally and airing clips for our own use. And but we put courtesy WWE on there, Scott. So we figured, we're covered. Mm.
I can imagine. Is this Mr. Haley or Mr. Burke?
Mr. Tom Burke.
Mr. Tom Burke. I see him going, some guy named McDevitt?
Yes.
Oh, some guy named Mr. McDevitt or something left a note for you.
Well, something tells me Jerry wasn't watching, but I guess we still had to cover ourselves. So,
yes,
anyone who watched that initial 8 o'clock airing, you saw it. But after that, I was
replaced with a Steve Piscatella story.
Yes. Escaping the library.
Yes. All right. We do have a Sunday Night Heat match. What is it, JR?
It is Rikishi, Scotty Too Hotty, and Albert. So kind of the meshing of Scotty's two buddies. It's like have one friend and you meet a new friend at work and you kind of start to maybe slowly blend them together. This is what Scotty's doing here, bringing his old pal and his new pal together. Okay. Defeat Mr. Perfect, Test, and Lance Storm, which is a pretty cool team. Cool to see Perfect at least get a payday here. We're not seeing him on pay-per-view. Yeah. We've already talked about, of course, the end of his run.
Yeah.
Were you surprised to see Test on a pre-show after kind of the year he had in 01?
Very much so. Very much so. And we'll see another fall from grace from another guy exactly 1 year later for different reasons. But considering all of the hoopla that we talked about with Test dating back to, God, Unforgiven, even SummerSlam, and to see him only be on the pre-show.
Well, even Survivor Series, he won the Immunity Battle Royal.
Yeah.
Even at the last show, him and Booker going for the tag titles. It's kind of weird that they didn't try and shoehorn him in somewhere into a tag match or something.
Yeah, it was very strange. I agree. Love that other that team though. Perfect, Test, and I love his partners, Perfect and Storm.
Yeah, it would have been a cool little faction.
But sadly, we don't see it. As JR mentioned, Saliva pre opening package opens with Superstar, which was the hot song at that time. I was a big Saliva guy. I liked their stuff. And I enjoyed their the opening video, as you mentioned, JR, going over all the it wasn't really historical pieces. It was really the builds, right?
Right. Well, the video before that was kind of looking at history. Like, I feel like we're back at like we were for X7, but even more heavy now. We saw the Lonely Road of Faith video a couple months ago, and now they're really starting to embrace more of the nostalgia with no competition and insight.
Right. Exactly. All right. Let's dive in. We got, how many? What do we have? 12, I think, matches?
No, it's not that many.
9?
11.
11. All right,
more than I thought, yeah.
Yeah, only up by one. Myriad of title matches. We begin with one.
Mm-hmm.
The World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Championship on the line to start. Your champion, he won it at the Royal Rumble, Mr. William Regal with those awesome black and red tights. Continuing to use the Nux. Taking on a guy that we've had some nice healthy debate about, JR, over the last four or five vaults, and that is Mr. Pay-Per-View himself, Rob Van Dam. RVD, started off hot in the summer and then had one bad match or one bad booking. I don't think he ever played in Canada. I don't even think he knew Canada existed. Hey, Gorilla, who's this guy with the weird Chinese things on his tights? I don't think he knows what Chinese things are either. And then, of course, the Taker loss. And now, kind of slowly moving himself back up the ladder. How did he get this title shot, JR?
Kind of an interesting one. On February 25th, RVD defeated Big Show and Lance Storm in a triple threat to earn this title shot. obviously a pretty foregone conclusion in that one. On March 11th, RVD defeated Regal in a six-man tag to gain some momentum hanging in here. And this would be the last Intercontinental title match at WrestleMania until WrestleMania 25, Scott.
Ugh,
so we go seven shows with no IC title match after this.
That's a bunch of crap.
Yeah, we've talked about a lot of Intercontinental title matches throughout Mania history. We've had some great ones. We've had some George Steele ones.
Yes.
A lot of interesting and good ones back and forth. But now we go into a drought for a little bit here.
Yeah, not good. This is, I mean, we've talked throughout the Attitude Era about the devaluing of the secondary belts, but this is where it really takes a big hit. I mean, there's a lot of cases where you think to yourself, they could have stuck an IC title match here. No. Very disappointing. Good match. We talk about difference in styles when Edge worked with him. You really see it here. I mean, you've got a guy who's, at the time, RVD was at his peak in terms of an aerial tactician, taking on a guy who loves to just ground you in the canvas and just, you know, rub you down to a nub. Did you like the with Edge? Do you think you liked after facing Edge? Did you kind of like the contrast of styles here?
Yeah, I thought this was a natural progression for RVD and a good mesh with Regal. I thought it made sense to get RVD back into a title picture. Mm-hmm. And I don't see anyone else on the card at first glance that would have really been a better fit for Regal. Mm-hmm. I thought RVD definitely needed the win here, though. This was a spot where he needed a big win. And he couldn't, you know, you don't want to see the title come right back off Regal so quickly, but he's in a good spot to be a transitional champion. I think a loss by RVD here would have been pretty rough.
It would have been devastating. Yeah.
And I always loved Regal, too. I thought he looked great at that belt around his waist. He was one of the guys that really pulls that look off.
Yes.
So I thought RVD started pretty fast. Regal went right to looking for the Nux in his tights, but RVD kicked him away, and they kind of reset things from there. They say, all right, now we got to wrestle.
Yeah, that was cool. I enjoyed that.
It's like get it out of your mind quickly, so you're not staring for it, waiting for it to come. RVD controlled, but he missed an early 5-star, turned the match around. What did you think of some of the bumps RVD took in this one? I thought they were some of the nastiest he's taken in the ring. A lot of head and neck bumps, different suplexes, showing off his flexibility. I thought Regal was a nice mesh with him. RVD was a good opponent for Regal to stiff with his suplexes.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who
suplexes is
suplexes. Gordon's, yes, suplexes. Yeah, this is a guy who Regal really got liberties with. I mean, RVD, in essence, said, "All right, you know, throw me around. Let's really make this work." And I think you'll see a lot of that. I think this 6 or 7 month stretch might be the best of RVD. No, it's the best of RVD's career, but I think you really see the true essence of his style of between now and into October. You know, he's a good seller, small guy, can get the crap beat out of him. I mean, Regal's not ridiculously bigger than
him.
Well,
and we've seen him fight some guys, you know, like Jericho and Jeff Hardy that are more of a, you know, Hardy was a lot of the garbagey style. And Jericho was more of a matching RVD, kind of flying around and kind of sloppy and striking. And we haven't really seen him with a guy, and that's probably because there's not really too many guys like Regal out there, that can snap off these suplexes and beat the shit out of someone. You know, we haven't seen him against a guy like Benoit. He's on the sidelines, or even, you know, Taz is pretty much washed up at this point. So we haven't seen him against a guy that can really punish him and toss him around and look stiff like this. And I thought Regal was a really good fit for that. So that was really cool to see. I thought Regal did a nice job countering RVD's key moves. It looked like he really had kind of planned for this one.
Yep.
And then Regal goes for the Nux. He finally finds them again, but RVD hits a 5-star before he can use them, which I thought was cool, too. He headed him off with that move and gets a nice pop. I actually thought they needed more time. I thought this could have been really, really good. Like, as it is, it's just kind of fine. But I thought this could have really been one of the more memorable Mania openers of all time if we had really given them maybe another, because how long did it go as is? It went
6:19.
Yeah, you give them another 8 or 9 minutes. I thought they really, I feel like they were just getting in gear.
Yeah.
And then it ended, you know? Like, I needed RVD to miss that frog splash, and then you go for another 5 or 6 minutes, and then he comes back.
But, yeah, good call. I agree with that.
Yeah, so RVD, I thought, needed this. Regal was a good transitional champion coming off the Edge feud. Do you feel like this rehabs RVD nicely, or do you think he's still behind the eight ball and needs more work?
Well, I mean, it's nice to have a gold around his waist. I mean, with all due respect to the hardcore title, a legit gold around his waist. And now it's time to kind of build him back up again and make him a solid mid-card guy and rebuild him a bit.
Isn't that
he did need rebuilding.
Though? like what you just said, we're going to build him back into a solid mid-card guy. This is a guy that had main event money star written all over him.
I agree.
Six months earlier, and now it's, oh, well, we got to build him back up to the, you know, mid-card level.
Well, yeah, I know. I know. I'd like to think eventually, JR, over the next four or five vaults that we can move away from that and be like, ah, I think the roster, right now there's kind of a dearth in the mid card because of two major guys that'll be coming back, one from injury, the other from detox, and really helps him kind of establish the mid card again as a good I don't say proving ground, but a good spot to really re-shine again. Because yes, he did go through kind of a shitty, you know, October to February.
I feel like he just came in at the wrong time. Like,
he did.
He came in at a time where the mid card needed some players as opposed to the main event scene, because now the main event was overloaded.
Right.
Instead of coming in maybe late 2000 when Austin went down, Rock would be taking time off, all the injuries hit. Like, if he had already been established in like December of 2000, he could have probably been elevated nicely in May or June. As is, by the time he came in, they were in the middle of the invasion. You can't really give him the top dog status with all. You know, I feel like he missed his great window to come in and immediately be a main event guy.
Mm. Yeah, that's the problem. I mean, by the time he was really getting going in November, December, you've got, you know, you had Triple H coming back. Yeah, Jericho has been elevated out of the mid card.
You had the invasion ending. Then you had to reset him. You had the NWO come in soon.
Right.
It's like, and now you just overloaded at the top again. So now it'll be a little bit before he can get some breathing room, and there is some space opened up over the next month or so with the way things go with the promotion, but he just seems like it's good to see him pick up some wins. He needs some more big wins in a row now. He
yeah
needs to keep
and
things going
right, and I think that just being on camera, I mean, his fan base is pretty hardcore, just like Jeff Hardy's, so they don't go away, and that's fine. And I think over the next, like I said, next four or five vaults, we'll talk about how he really gains the momentum. He does gain the momentum again. Maybe it gets squelched again, but we'll talk about that when we get there. But in any event, he does right here hit the 5-star frog splash and win the World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Championship, and kind of gets the road back. He was derailed.
Can you think of another guy like RVD? We've done a lot of vaults now at this point. Mm-hmm. Have we ever had a guy like this that we've gone every month saying, oh, man, what could have been? Like, I feel like we haven't had a big one like this yet. I mean, there must have been at some point. Mr. Perfect or something back in 90. I'm trying to rack my brain quickly to think of a guy that
Owen, 94? Nah, not really.
Yeah, I feel like he had his run, Owen, on top, though. You know what I mean? Like, I don't feel like RVD got that sustained run on top. Like, Owen was a main event guy throughout all of 94, pretty much.
Right. Yes. True.
And Vader, maybe? I feel like we lamented about Vader a lot.
Well, Vader was screwed by outside forces. It wasn't really him.
RVD.
It was booking, just like RVD. Yeah. From a different perspective, but yeah.
Yeah, Vader might be one of the closest ones.
Vader might be the closest, yeah.
All right, yeah. Good match. I wish I had more time. I know it's a pretty full show, but this is one I would have liked to see them go again. I mean, I'm not going to complain about where RVD goes next because it ends up being really good, but I was kind of sad we only get one match out of these two and it only goes 6 minutes. I feel like we could have gotten more from them on pay-per-view.
Mm. Oh, I agree. This feud could have continued. However, we get a big return between now and our next show.
Yes.
And I think it was better suited. I think it was a better fitting thing for RVD. I'm sure these two fight on a Raw or something between now and, because I mean, Regal obviously needed a rematch, so I'm sure it was sometime on free TV. All right, so Rob Van Dam opens the show with a good match that could have been better if they had more time, and he is your new World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Champion. Next up, our second title match of the evening, JR, the World Wrestling Federation European title on the line. And your champion has changed since we last saw the belt. It was Christian, and he had had it since, Survivor Series, was it? Yeah.
European
Before
title?
Survivor Series. Before Survivor Series, and he's held it for a while. But on the 131 SmackDown, well, before we get to that, his opponent was helping Christian out. Why did he need help, JR?
Because he was being a bitch, Scott Coscolo.
Yes, he was.
I lost my spot here. So on the 111 Raw, is this where you're going to go?
Yes.
Okay. Christian turned on his mentor, DDP, after DDP helped him defeat Billy in a match. Christian had been down on his luck in a losing streak since the end of 01. He had been throwing these embarrassing temper tantrums in the ring after he lost. DDP took him under his wing as a motivational speaker and coach, and Christian was actually getting better, but then he turned on him. Page had been doing the motivational speaker gimmick shortly after the invasion, and his routines became something of an internet favorite. Of course, he always started his catchphrase, "That's not a bad thing. That's a good thing."
And then the big smile.
The big smile and everything. So, and it would play off. Remember, he wrote the Positively Page book in 99. Always been a very upbeat, positive guy, as we would see many years later.
Yes.
This would end up being Page's final pay-per-view appearance. His final TV appearance was in the April 18th SmackDown. He lost to Hardcore Holly, ended up banging up his back pretty badly, and needed some time off. Bounced around the Indies, showed up in TNA in 2004 and 5. Kind of faded from the wrestling spotlight, began acting, teaching some fitness classes, giving motivational speeches. Hit the news cycle in 2006 when he sued Jay-Z over the Diamond Cutter signal. They settled that out of court. And then, of course, the phenomenon known as DDP Yoga launched and kind of brought him back to full relevance. And I think everyone knows the story of DDP Yoga from there. We're not going to go through it all.
Yes, exactly.
But a guy that's completely reinvented not only his old life and career, also saved the lives and careers of many other wrestlers as well. Most recently in the news, of course, for turning around Jake Roberts and Scott Hall. And they're in the Hall of Fame looking better than ever. Guys like Chris Jericho, Ryback, and other wrestlers use the yoga routine to supplement their workouts as well. So he's doing a great job with it. A guy that, in his own right, probably belongs in the Hall of Fame soon. And here he is in 2002, finishing up a very brief stay. But it was nice to see him get that one Mania match that we'll talk about in a minute. So DDP would end up beating Christian for that European title on the January 31st SmackDown. Mm-hmm. And then they would clash here. This feud kind of felt a little bit, watching the match itself, the feud had felt rushed. I guess I had kind of forgotten how long they had been kind of going since January.
Right.
I thought they split up closer to the show. I didn't realize they split up way back in January. The one thing I thought was really annoying was Christian overall.
Yeah.
I couldn't stand when he mocked the DDP face and like did the squinty eyes. Like it looked really weird, didn't it? It was kind of creepy.
It looked very weird. It looked, very strange. He just as we were talking about him having to turn the corner, he still had the outdated hair, the outdated fishnet shirt, and now his whole personality was just getting out of hand.
Very annoying and very grating. I didn't enjoy him at all here. DDP's self-help gimmick, I thought, really caught on and was kind of the star. Obviously, would he become eventually? Do you think it was fitting DDP back in Skydome? His only other Mania appearance was driving the pink Cadillac back at WrestleMania 6.
Pink Cadillac, baby, yeah.
For Rhythm and Blues.
That's right.
And here he is back here 12 years later for his only WrestleMania appearance in the Skydome.
Yes, it was. It was pretty cool. It was pretty cool. I love DDP. He got kind of the shaft in 01 and never really. I mean, he did get the token title, the tag title run with Canyon, but totally forgotten, even though he probably should have been a more headlining guy in the for the invasion. And he wasn't. And it was nice to see him get a little bit of a shine here over the last 2 months.
I thought he looked pretty good here too.
Yeah. No, he did. The match is good. It's nothing earth shattering, but it was pretty good. And
it was. I mean, it's basic. The crowd actually kind of stayed into it. I thought they actually had some pretty nice chemistry. DDP really had a good arsenal. I thought he was. The more I watched this match, I thought he was really wasted in the invasion because he was suited at this point to be a face, and he always was. He was always a better face. Once he turned in 97, that was where his bread was buttered. And I thought he maybe should have, looking back at this, I kind of wish he jumped sides and went to Team WWF and started doing the positive thing earlier and working from underneath. I thought he was much better suited for that, and busting out his comebacks and his arsenal was one of his strengths. So it always kind of made me feel like he was definitely a missed opportunity in the invasion. Were you surprised DDP won this?
No.
I remember at the time I thought for sure Christian was going to win. It seemed kind of weird. I mean, it was a nice nod to DDP to let him win.
Mm-hmm.
But on the flip side, it just seemed like Christian was a guy that kind of needed this win more. Like, where was DDP really headed?
Well, that plus, I mean, we'd see later on in the night Christian would kind of get a little bit of his mojo back.
Right.
Only to look like a jackass again, but that's okay. No, I was actually, it was being a little selfish here, but I was personally happy to see DDP win. So was I surprised he won? A little, but not a lot. It was good to see. I don't know. He deserved a showcase WrestleMania win. It was nice to see him win the match. Christian was going to be around for a while. Oh, so.
And then we got Christian doing the crying fucking stupid...
Oh, smacking himself on the... Yeah, just,
I couldn't stand that. I hated him at this point. I really did. And I was a big Christian fan when he first... Even when he first turned heel, I really liked the, you know, for Last Year on Your Own, the music. He just... We said it a million times. His look was dated, and this whole crying thing and the stupid squinty eye face, it just the whole thing just made you want to punch him in the throat. But this match was definitely way better than I remembered. I had zero recollection of what this match was, and then I rewatched it, and I enjoyed it. It was actually better than I thought.
Yeah, I agree. And I was happy DDP won. I really am. But I think we'll see Christian kind of shake it off. I mean, I think this was kind of just a... I think Christian was more the sacrificial lamb to see DDP kind of get his moment, but he'll get it back. And he shakes off this kind of annoying thing, and we'll see him definitely get better as 2002 right. progresses. But Diamond Dallas Page does retain his World Wrestling Federation European Championship with the win here over Christian. And like I said, I think I agree with you. It was very grating, but I think he'll definitely get back in a good groove as the year progresses. Okay. Coach. It's a great promo here.
Yes. Rock was like, he interviews The Rock. Rock was flying high in this one. He was all over the place. Mm. Really fired up, a lot of energy. And, of course, we get the very classic where Rock makes Coach pray, and he does the what up G, and then Rock calls him a sick freak and kicks him over.
Yes.
I really like this promo, actually. One of my favorite Rock ones from this era, and I thought Coach did a great job.
Yeah, Coach was a good foil, and we'll see more of that over time. Although the fans were booing, so maybe a premonition. A lot of people were kind of shocked, and we'll talk more about it later, about The Rock getting booed more than expected. But it even started here, because I think the Toronto fans were already kind of jumping on his opponent's bandwagon even before the match started. But we'll talk more about that when we get to that match. All right, third title match out of the gate. Not bad. 3-for-3 on title matches. This time the World Wrestling Federation Hardcore Championship on the line. Your champion, guy we talked about, JR, back at the Royal Rumble, and that was tough enough one winner, Maven.
What?
On the guy's side, yes. Maven is your hardcore champion. How did he get there?
He defeated The Undertaker, Scott.
What?
For the hardcore title. I believe Rock was involved in that. Yep. Or was it Flair? I think it was actually Flair.
Mm. No, I think it was Rock, actually.
Was it Rock? Was it before No Way Out?
Yeah, because it was before No Way Out, yeah.
Okay.
I'll double check that.
Yeah, look it up while we're talking. I think you're right, actually. I think it was Rock. So Maven is your new hardcore champion. And since that time, we also had a couple of other changes. Goldust defeated him, and Al Snow defeated Goldust, and Maven defeated Al Snow, his former trainer. So the title back with Maven here, and this match is under 24/7 rules. So we're back to that gimmick now, Scott. And his opponent here is Goldust. I was hoping you were going to do the bite.
I was going to do the bite. I didn't hear you say Goldust. You really did it. You did it much lower than even I do it. I didn't even hear you. That's what I was waiting for. I was going to do the chomp. I didn't even hear you do Goldust. Wow. It's more like... Did you just swallow? Well, it was indeed Rock, JR, on the February 7th SmackDown. He hit Taker with a chair and won the hardcore title for Maven.
Okay.
So there you go.
Kind of a weird match. Both guys have just showed up in January, and here they are on Mania for the hardcore title.
I know.
It's very weird. You know, usually this would be like the blow off to something bigger. Instead, you get these guys who are I mean, I'm not complaining. I love Goldust. Glad to see him back in Mania. Mm-hmm. And they were pushing Maven pretty strong out of the box here to help put over the new season of Tough Enough that was coming. Do you think it was weird we're back to the 24/7 rule?
I
Did
think
it feel
was,
like desperate at this point?
No, I think it was more just to for the storyline of the evening. I don't think it was meant for anything more than that.
Yeah, but I think it was back in. I think it was back on TV. I thought too.
Was it? I don't remember.
With all those title changes, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it must have been. Yes, in that instance, yes, it is desperation.
It seems like they're trying to gasp any last piece of life into the hardcore title by
the
doing
hardcore title. Exactly. Yeah, I don't think it was totally necessary. I think. The opponents or the participants in this match were fine. And this is where you start seeing, you know, WWF's trying to, you know, I mean, this guy was on the reality show. He won Tough Enough. You might as well, you know, give him a rub and get the guy started. And, you know, Goldust, you know, he's a Triple H guy, so obviously he's going to get a little, you know, extra sizzle to get on the show, and that doesn't hurt because, I mean, you know, Dustin busts his ass when he's in the ring. So in that instance, I wasn't totally shocked at that. But yes, the 24/7 thing was kind of reaching the end of the line. I agree. It seemed very.
Did you think the title itself was hitting the end of the line?
Yes, I do. I do. I think you had said something back at Unforgiven that after 9/11, a lot of the little things about the Attitude Era seemed dated and, I don't want to say inappropriate, but kind of out of touch. I think this is one of those things.
Yeah.
Constant hardcore title matches. It seems so.
Well, was it that or was it
so
just
2000?
I was say, was it that or do you think in this case it was just had been beaten to the ground so much?
I think it's a combination of both. I think we're out of that realm of.
Because, I mean, 01 had a good run, early 01. We had a lot of great hardcore matches, and now it just feels. It feels like it's become the back to being the division where we just. And it got this way a little bit in 2000. The division just throw all the guys that we don't know what to do with in.
Yeah, well, of course. Yeah.
Like, in 01, I feel like we actually had hardcore guys that wanted that title, that were involved in that feud with Raven and Big Show and those, you know, Rhino. And, you know, RVD Jeff was a good mix. And now I just feel like it's, all right, who's on the card? Who's not on the card? Just throw them all into the hardcore thing. You know, it's, I feel like we're back to kind of that where we were 2 years ago in 2000.
I mean, early, mid-2000 is where I felt the division was like that. And then we had that great stretch where your boy Blackman was champion. And that was a good stretch for the hardcore title. Because no one was fucking with him 24/7. And then early 01, like you said, to middle 01, we have the awesome Raven Rhino matches. And yeah, I just felt it didn't fit anymore. It didn't fit anymore. And it just felt very dated. And I think it was just meant to give, Maven, this new guy, you know, a WrestleMania moment. And you could tell he was like in awe walking down that ramp at Skydome, the long ramp that it was. And Goldust again, old school guy who, you know, always works hard and was probably thrilled to have a job again without having to go, my name is Seven. You know, actually in a legitimate good feud going on here. So,
and he beats the piss out of Maven early. Some of those
weapons. He crushes him. He kicks him into the, throws him into the barricade. He jumps off the rope and kicks him in the face. And, oh, yeah, he beats the shit out of him.
I liked the golden weapons. That was a nice touch. All the, everything.
Yes, the golden trash can. And, yes, I agree with that 100%.
Maven's pretty good at taking a beating, as we've seen. His offense is a little shaky, but like we saw at the Rumble in here, he can sell.
He can sell
the best of them.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Spike comes out with the ref, steals the title, runs away with it. Crash, still around, Crash Holly. He comes out, chases him on, and that segment ends there. So no clean winner. Well, Spike, I guess, technically the winner. Stole the title, takes off. Maven and Goldust left hanging, neither as champion.
Yeah, yeah. And not the end of the night for this title.
No.
Or this match. So at the moment, as we leave this portion of the match, Spike Dudley is your hardcore champion, even though he's not in the match.
And then we get another concert here, Scott, which Drowning Pool performs. Very, very bloated with this stuff. Like, do we need another music performance here? I feel like if we had the one to open the show, we're going to have some performances later still. I didn't feel like Drowning Pool was necessary to play a song here.
And this song was just for the Triple H to Chris Jericho feud.
Yeah.
That's all it was for.
It was odd. It was an odd decision.
Really stupid. I agree.
And the show, again, already had a lot going on. But at the time, I guess I still feel like there wasn't a lot of backlash to it. And even the crowd doesn't really boo or anything. You know, so they're all kind of fine. So very, very weird. So backstage, the hardcore title match continued as well. Al Snow shows up, drives a golf cart into a random stack of cardboard boxes. Then Hurricane flies in, whoosh, and wins the belt. I thought that spot was kind of cool. He comes flying in on a rope, and they play the little sound effect, like the hurricane coming in. But did you notice how awful the kick was to Spike? He barely hits him.
Oh, it was terrible. It was absolutely horrendous. This whole thing was just a colossal waste.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was kind of entertaining, but this move was awful, and so Hurricane now is your current hardcore champion. Now, the Al Snow spot was funny when he drives.
When he drives into the hole. Well, you saw those boxes there. You're like, all right, something's going down there.
Right. I mean, what the hell were those? That was like random, like huge, like 9 stacked high of cardboard boxes. Very odd to be randomly backstage, but
yeah, very, very weird. Very weird. So now, as JR mentioned, Hurricane is your hardcore champion. All right. Our next match.
That's gotta be Kane.
Yes, it does. Weird match because a lot of people thought that this was a leftover, but I ended up watching it and kind of enjoying it, actually.
I've been waiting
Can't go wrong with CeeLo Green.
Precisely, and continuing to fill Steve Rogers' iPod. All right. Your boy kind of fell off the rails a little bit here. Mm. Coming off his win. Now, here's the weird thing. We're going to have to combine storylines here, because the last time we saw your boy, JR, he was the number one contender for the Undisputed Championship.
Yes, he was.
Beat Triple H at No Way Out.
Yes, he did.
Got the title shot.
Let's just say he lost it. We'll cover how later.
Yeah.
But we'll say for now, he is no longer the number one contender.
No, he was not. Lost it the next night, and we'll get more into that later. Thinks it's Kane's fault. And these two actually wrestled before this, JR.
On the 221 SmackDown, Kane defeated Kurt Angle. It's considered to be a pretty great match. I remember really digging it.
Mm, me too.
You could tell maybe Angle had a little piss of vinegar involved in him. Mm-hmm. On the same night, Angle assaulted Kane with a chair, put him through a table, and hit him in the ankle lock. Kane got some revenge the next week on Raw when he cost Angle a championship match with Chris Jericho. And finally, on the March 7th SmackDown, Kurt and Kane got into a backstage brawl, and Kurt crushed Kane with a chair shot to the head after trapping him under a garage door, and that would become a running storyline throughout this match as the head trauma suffered by Kane.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, it would be a major concussion angle, but back then, yes. Just friendly old head trauma. So, this definitely felt rushed. It definitely felt like a letdown after his last 12 months that we've seen. Do you agree with that?
Of course. Absolutely. Kurt was on the fast track in many ways. And, 2001, he was pretty much main eventing almost every show. He was pretty much main eventing every show. I would say from Invasion all the way to... Yeah, pretty much No Way Out. I mean, maybe not the last match, but definitely one of the highlight feuds.
Right.
And now, this is one of his more forgettable WrestleMania matches. Again, the main event was painted in place when Triple H came back in early January, and after that, you kind of had to siphon all these other guys off and give them something to do.
But that's the thing. It's like this is where that stupid screwed up shit at No Way Out comes really back to bite them in the ass, because... They knew for a while where they were going with Triple H. And they knew since early January that that's where they were going. So why not get Kurt settled into something better?
Mm.
Like, why rush this thing with Kane? Because they wanted him to be the pawn in the Triple H thing, which was not necessary at all. We didn't need that at all. So that left him very little time to get ramped up.
Right.
Do you feel like him and RVD would have been a cool feud here?
Ooh. Yes. Good call, JR. Never thought about that combination.
Well, let me throw this by you. How about him and Austin blowing off their feud for good? Or have they just fought enough for you?
I think they fought enough. I think the feud ended when Steve beat him at Vengeance.
Yeah.
I think that ended it there.
Okay, so going back.
But RVD, though, now there's a Pandora's box you just opened. RVD. But what do you do with it? Just make it a random match? Like, just make it a regular match?
Well, you put a little bit of... I mean, it's the same here. It's probably just a feud. But maybe you build it... I don't know. Maybe you start somewhere in the Rumble. Maybe Kurt cheats and throws RVD out, because they're both in towards the end. Maybe one of them throws the other one out. And you kind of build some angst from there. And you let it grow. And maybe RVD gets involved in No Way Out. And it builds from there. Add a little more juice to it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe make it a number one contenders match. Add a little something there to it. It would have really helped RVD if you let him go over Kurt. You know, Kurt kind of needed the win, honestly, too. He was floundering a bit. But RVD getting a main event, a WrestleMania win over Kurt Angle would have really helped push him along, probably more than winning the IC title did.
Right.
Because now, instead of saying we're rebuilding him as a mid-carder, you beat Kurt Angle at WrestleMania, now you're rebuilding him as a main eventer.
Yes, that is true.
You're no longer just trying to reestablish him as a mid-card player, like you said earlier. You know, now we're looking more at rebuilding him as a main event level guy.
Well, let me ask you this. Does Kurt need rebuilding?
Yes, he does, but I feel like his can wait because I feel like he had such a sustained long run that I don't think a loss here would have hurt him if it was to a guy like RVD. Mm-hmm. Like, if you give him on RVD like 16 minutes to open the show,
right,
or in the middle of the show, I don't think we get as much. Like, I don't think it matters as much if Kurt loses that match. And you can have Regal. You can have Regal retained by beating Kane. You could have done that match instead.
Yeah, it would have been a decent. I would have opened with RVD Kurt. I still would have. Yeah. RVD, I think, needed to open the show regardless whoever what opponent you give him. In a perfect world, I mean, perfect world, RVD winning the Rumble would have been pretty sweet. And then RVD Jericho would have been a fantastic match.
Well, yeah, but I'm not going to rebook that because this was meant for Triple H from Jumpstart.
Right, but I wonder if he never got hurt and if he was around all around 2001 if things would have changed. But, I mean, again, that's a lot of quarterbacking, Monday morning quarterbacking. The match is just under 11 minutes. I liked it.
Oh, it was definitely good. I just feel like Angle needed more.
We would also have a trend tonight with alternate tights. Kurt had those swank black ones. He didn't wear black very often, so those were kind of cool. Somebody else tonight would on this evening would be wearing cool alternate tights. We'll get to them later.
The black tights were awesome.
The black tights were awesome. Never wore black boots, though, Kurt, in his career, WWF career. He usually wore white or red. He was in the red stretch here. Kane's bulletproof at this point, right? I mean, when's the loss?
Nothing mattered here. This was a gimme for Angle. I mean, this was one he absolutely had to win.
Yeah, I think so. And, but I think a lot of people feel that, oh man, this was a throwaway crap match. And
definitely not.
Maybe the feud was a throwaway, but certainly not the match.
It just felt like a match that would have been at a No Way Out or a Backlash or something. Like, it felt like coming off the year Angle had, it just felt like a real letdown. That's all. Like, he's had such a big year in 2001, and it felt like, wow, now here he is just fighting Kane, who was kind of meandering through a lot of 01. In a match that doesn't really have any stakes. So Kane's got the head trauma going on. Kurt bashes him with the bell to start right before the bell rings. So the head trauma thing continues to get pushed. I thought Kane did a nice job keeping pace with Angle. They were both hard-hitting. JR really pushes here. The Angle's angry that he's left out of the title match. I thought that was a good storyline hook because he wrestles very aggressively and very angry, which I liked. I liked, too, that he punished the head with Germans. It was an interesting way to punish Kane's head and neck.
Yes.
Clubbing on it, but with German suplex is one of his fortes. Yep. And it was a good way to cut off comebacks, too. I feel like anytime Kane started to come back, Angle would hook a German and chuck him and bang him back off his head. Kane had a good banged up comeback, kind of hurting, and then gets a good near fall on the choke slam. And it really, like you said, ended up being a well worked match. Kurt Angle twists Kane's mask and hits the Angle slam. I thought that was it for sure. Kane survived that. Then he fights out of the ankle lock. Angle hits a nice pop-up belly-to-belly off the top rope. At this point, I was digging the back-and-forth here, Scott. Awesome reversal, too, with Kurt flipping through the choke slam into a roll-up, puts his foot on the ropes, a callback to the year before, and picks up the win. One he needed to get the momentum back, and I agreed with you. This was really... I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did, too. Love the running up the ropes. That was very cool. Everything about this match was good, but I think this is one of those matches where you really got to put in your back pocket. You know, Kurt Angle's a good worker. I mean, we all knew it was, but he's a real good worker. And here's a match that you could be like, yeah, he could have just kind of sleptwalked through it. But, and look, they got more time. The two of them got more time than RVD Regal or DDP Christian got. So,
well, and I think they deserved it. I mean, I think you're moving further up the card. Angle's a bigger guy at this point. So I'm fine. That's perfectly fine by me.
Right.
To have them get that extra time. But, yeah, it's a dichotomy. It's a throwback to the older Manias, and we got a couple of those matches on the show, a few of them really, where it's just two guys kind of didn't have anything to do, let's pair them up and let them go. And it was a nice win for Kurt to kind of reestablish him. I just felt like, God, he had such a good 0-1, and he hasn't had that marquee Mania match yet because his big push started after Mania.
Yes.
Last year, you know, like he had a great match with Benoit, but even that was truncated. You know, we talked about that, so...
Yep.
He hasn't had that marquee Mania match. His big run came between Manias. Both times, both of his big runs so far have been between Manias. So he hasn't had that chance to really get that big-time Mania match.
Which he will get.
He will, but I feel like here he could have gotten one of them.
Yes, I agree. So there you go. Kurt Angle gets the win, kind of rebuilding himself, and then he forges into a pretty good feud, which we'll talk about in the next vault.
And then we head backstage for another goofy skit. So Hurricane's hiding behind like one of those sheer changing walls where the divas always get naked.
Yes.
And he's holding a broom because he hears people coming, and it's the hoes come in, and they're changing up, and they look, and they see the Hurricane picks the broom up, so it looks like Gavis has a big erection. They start screaming, the Godfather comes in and runs them off. So that's Godfather's only appearance here, still kind of trucking around since his return at the Rumble.
Well, the fun part of the one point we have to add is that the hoes were discussing who had the nicer sized boobs. So
that's right. Yes,
what do you think of these? Oh, those are nice. Well, what about mine? Oh, those look good. Meanwhile, all of a sudden the broom's getting going higher and higher and higher. It was such a mess.
Kind of goofy. I mean, funny enough for a throwaway, but yeah, it's right up King's Alley.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was a throwaway segment. This match, not a throwaway. And watching it again, damn it, was good. Yes, a match that watching again, I absolutely love. One of my favorite of both of these guys of all time, and I think a very underrated, unheralded WrestleMania match. All right, let me do the build on this one.
Okay.
After the Undertaker lost at No Way Out to The Rock, thanks to co-owner of the company, Ric Flair. Taker wanted Flair in a match at WrestleMania. Enough of your shit. Come on, old man. Let's go wrestle. Flair said no. I am the co-owner. None of this nonsense. So Taker tried to persuade Flair to change his mind. Following a match on the February 25th Raw, Flair's friend Arn Anderson, who was, of course, a road agent, was ambushed by Undertaker during backstage doing some duties. Gets beat up, busted open. Then a segment that was one of your favorites, JR. Undertaker followed up a week later by attacking Flair's son, David, at the training facility. And he was standing there sitting, what was it, like a toilet stall or something? Sitting there, David's all bleeding. And,
yeah,
and
he says, awesome.
Yeah, and he says, I know you have more kids than this.
Good line.
That's funny. After this attack, Flair finally accepted the match on the March 7th SmackDown. So there's only 10 days of build for this match. Later that night, the two ended up brawling into the audience, and Flair accidentally knocks out another fan. As a result, Flair was arrested. Taker was thrilled. And on the March 11th Raw, the go-home, Flair's rival co-owner, Mr. Vince McMahon, asked for an emergency board meeting with the WWF board of directors, citing that Flair's attack of a fan was unacceptable and that either he or Flair should have absolute authority and power over the company. With Flair still keen on taking on Undertaker at WrestleMania, CEO Linda McMahon had no choice but to give Vince total control over the company, at least till WrestleMania. And then Linda said that after the show, they will review the ownership situation with a final decision to be made then. To add further insult, Vince books David Flair in a match against Taker on the go-home SmackDown. Taker almost gives David a last ride, but was stopped by Flair, who saved his son with some steel chair shots to Taker. And incidentally, at that board meeting, Vince also made is when he made the match a no DQ street fight. And 10 years after losing the World Wrestling Federation Championship to Randy Savage at one of my PIC's favorite manias ever, WrestleMania 8, Flair comes out in the same awesome red tights, red boots combo.
Yes.
Which I thought was fucking cool. And a little backstage action here. Taker actually wanted to face Flair at the show, requesting him, which played a major part in helping rebuild Flair's pretty beat up self-confidence as a worker again. So
yeah, great, great builds for this one.
Yeah.
A lot of cool stuff. The David Flair stuff going inside the training facility, something we hadn't really seen before. Taker just continues to be an awesome, awesome heel. And of course, not to be lost in all this, like you said, the board meeting really sets up what would come following the show, where they review the ownership situation. Vince assumes he'll probably be in full control going forward because Flair hit the fan and they let him wrestle, which he was not supposed to be able to do. So that carries into the ring here. Flair is very manic, comes out. The match is no DQ. Vince had made that no DQ. A lot of brawling. Flair's going crazy. Taker gets his cheek sliced open. Taker then takes over and just slowly pounds on Flair. I loved the Flair flop in the corner, and he walks into Taker's stiff big boot, knocks him to the floor.
Yep.
Flair ends up getting busted open by right hands from Taker, so soup bones. He's bleeding. And I thought that made it realistic. We didn't need weapons on this one. It was a brawl, but Taker just pounding him with his fists, just beating the piss out of him until he bled. Awesome, awesome Undertaker superplex. I love that. And it's amazing to me, Scott, and I'm sure to you, how far Taker has come physically in the last couple of years. Could you imagine him doing a top rope superplex in 2000?
Oh, God, no.
His body and the ring would have fucking shattered.
Yeah, the ring would have fucking flipped. Yeah. No, Taker, this was the best thing that could have happened to both guys. Flair, as we all know, as we know now, was pretty much in the toilet emotionally after WCW closed down and spent the summer of 01 kind of feeling sorry for himself. And then, you know, came back in November, sort of got his confidence back after beating Vince at the Rumble. But here, Taker really pulls him out of the doldrums. Mm-hmm. And it's just such a fun match. Almost 19 minutes. And they just beat the snot out of each other. And what would end up being, JR, as we now know, last match for Undertaker as a heel at WrestleMania. He just throws. I mean, he throws a beating like nobody's business. But then, of course,
Flair gets some hope. Taker beats him up, and I loved again that there are no weapons, just basic stiff offense here.
Yeah, pretty much.
Flair would get the pipe, of course, as we mentioned, the weapon du jour. Early 2002 starts unloading to come back. Taker's bleeding now; they're both bleeding. Flair hits the figure four, and then Scott in one of the best Undertaker near falls at WrestleMania to date. Ugh. What happened?
Oh my God. The way the camera's laid out, it's holy shit. You don't even see it coming. All of a sudden, while Flair is on one end of the ring, kind of half beat up, Taker is standing, and all of a sudden he turns around, and out of nowhere, I mean, what a job by Kevin Dunn here, because you never saw it coming. Arn Anderson slides into the ring from the ramp side and drops the bitchinest spinebuster he's done in like fucking 7 years.
He's been saving that one up since he had retired, and the crowd goes fucking bananas.
Oh my God, it was awesome.
I thought, did you think the Taker streak was ending right there?
Yes.
At 10? I mean, I definitely thought he was probably done right there. I mean, that was an awesome near fall, and that didn't do it. So Taker beats up Arn, bloodies him, and chokes him out. Flair avoids the last ride, but ends up eating a tombstone for the loss. A very, very good brawl. Really, the first time they really referenced the undefeated streak. Taker holds up the 10 fingers after the match to show that he's 10-0 at WrestleMania. It was rumored at the time that Flair was going to win. Taker had mentioned that he was fine with Flair beating him. But I thought this was pretty wise. I didn't think Flair needed to win. He got his revenge in the match itself. His revenge was taking Taker to the limit, bloodying him, beating him down. He didn't need the victory. I thought Taker was awesome. Very bloody and old-school match. And you see, after Taker leaves, you get the ref, Flair, and Arn all laid out as carnage in the ring.
Yes.
Bloodied up. So, beginning maybe a little bit slow, but I thought this thing kicked in pretty quickly with the fists and the blood. And, yes, a very good match. Early on, definitely, probably at this point, Taker's best Mania match through the first 10.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, last year's with Triple H was really good.
I think it's better than that.
At 17, but this is better. No, I agree it's better. But the one at 17 was good. But this
the only other one that comes close made Diesel.
Well, definitely Diesel.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, Sid's not very good.
Kane.
Boss Man. No. Yeah, definitely these last 12, 17, and 18 of his first 10 were really good. That's the first time he acknowledges it. He sits there. He throws his fingers up, 1 through 10. So he is 10-0 at this point. And he acknowledges the streak himself for the first time. And it's not really – it's still not totally mentioned all the time. I mean, JR casually says as he's riding down the ramp that he's 9-0 going in, but he really doesn't. It's not like obviously they would do, for the last few years, but just a fun, fun match and for both guys. And it kind of gives Flair that the confidence he had been missing to eventually maybe get back in as a regular competitor. But at the time, he was still technically the co-owner, but just a fantastic match. Taker's best at Mania through the first 10 of his illustrious career. All right, next up, a match that that you kind of categorized earlier, JR, as a match of guys who, you had nothing to do, so you slap them together, and right. I didn't like this at all.
A weird storyline,
Edge taking on Booker
weird.
T.
Very weird.
You can lay this out, because I just...
I think you need, I think this is a storyline like you and Rotella would be in.
Well, one of us has hair, so.
speaking of Rotella, I believe he won the March Madness tournament challenge for PTB. The idiots.
Came back today.
Yeah.
He came back to work today, so. Oh, we're coming for you, nigga. Yeah, that guy.
Yep.
Rotella, we're coming for. This all over a year.
Well, it was a couple things. So Edge, there were two parts of this. So Booker was supposed to get some Japanese shampoo commercial deal, and Edge ends up getting it instead because of his sexy hair. And then Edge started calling Booker dumb because maybe you harken back to how bad he was in The Weakest Link. And so Booker's trying to prove that he's not dumb and he's got the glasses on and all that stuff. So it's kind of a campy feud, odd feud. And I think it's one of those ones people run with nowadays, even like, oh, at least I'm not feuding over a hair commercial. But I don't think it was ever meant to be serious. Like, I think people look back at it like it was a serious feud, but I think it was played for camp even at the time. Like, it was like they have a joke about it on commentary. Like, it was never played up like it was a serious feud over hair shampoo or right. whatever. It's like, I feel like it's one of those things that's kind of taken on a legend of its own. Like, the you know, who raised the briefcase of Kim, like, we know the answer. Yeah. Like, this was meant to be campy. It wasn't meant to be a legit feud over a shampoo deal. I mean, it was meant to be a joke. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong that they did it, but I think it's taken more seriously than it was at the time. But again, yeah. Two guys, you feel it's I mean, at least they're here with a match, but I feel like two other guys that maybe could have been in the mix. I mean, maybe if we do Kurt and RVD, maybe you do a four-way for the IC title. You do Edge, Booker, Regal, and Kane.
Yeah.
Or what if we did a tag, something of a tag here? You put TNT together still and you have Edge team up with someone.
Hmm.
Because you have the TNT thing still going.
Yeah.
I think Kane. Test deserved to be on the show. Well, yeah, if you get, in my fantasy world, you get RVD, Angle, Kane, and Regal. So maybe you do Edge and, I don't know, Mr. Perfect? I don't know. Someone. You got to be able to find someone on this friggin'
hit. Well, we do end up seeing Edge ends up fighting Perfect on a heat at right. some point down the line. But, yeah. There's a lot of options here. I as much as that six-man tag is really good, they could have broke that tag up and done something else.
Yeah.
I like Perfect in any role. I'm so...
Yeah, Edge and Perfect versus Booker and Test would have been pretty cool.
No, remember Booker and Test, tag champs.
Yeah.
In 01. Had some history.
Well, they just teamed up in No Way Out, too.
Yeah, so why not keep it? Instead of throwing this really lame match together. I don't know. I didn't like it. I didn't like any of it. I understand the campiness. I don't know. This was a case where you could have definitely utilized more guys and made this better. And you didn't. But anyway, Edge gets the win with the execution. Again, 6.5 minutes. Nothing earth-shattering there.
And Edge got a good pop.
Do
you feel like he felt like a legit singles player now after the IC run? Kind of feels matured as a star. Doesn't feel like a guy.
Yes.
Doesn't feel like a tag guy turned into a singles guy anymore. He feels like a singles guy now.
Well, yeah, and being here in his backyard and getting the home pop is very helpful visually, and fans at home be like, "Wow, maybe he really is over." And you know, he was, but obviously being in Toronto it doesn't hurt. So
and King was pushing the. Shampoo stuff here. I mean, not too annoying. Actually, I didn't mind him on the show compared to No Way Out. I actually thought he was a little bit more tame.
Mm.
But not as annoying, but he was pushing the shampoo thing a lot. And I like the spot of Booker jumping over the spear and Edge slammed into the buckle and Booker crunched him with a super kick. To me, that was the best spot of the match.
Yeah, it was.
Spinner-Rudy starting to gain some steam with the fans. Booker does that here. And then Edge, Edge gets to win. Nice win. Really not much going on. Two guys in the same spot before and after the match, having a solid match together. Both kind of at the same level. So, again, a match you would have seen like at WrestleMania 7 and probably not blinked an eye, you know?
Yeah. No, I agree. So, Edge gets the win. And
do you think they didn't use, like, contender stipulations enough at this point? Like, why not say the winner of this gets an IC title match or something?
Yeah, why not?
At least add something to it, you know?
Yeah, you know, Edge could say, you know...
Or play it up, even if they don't win, even if it's not, like... You know, we always talk about Jesse and Gorilla and those guys. Why not talk about here, instead of bitching about shampoo, why not say, you know, this is a big match in the eyes of the matchmakers and the owners. Both guys could be in line for potential world title shot, but a loss here will really knock him back, and a win could really, you know, vault up. Like, they didn't talk about that kind of stuff at all. Like, these are two guys that really could have been, you know, big in that spot. I thought they could have really been in a good position.
Unfortunately, at this point, the announcers were still in that attitude era mode, and Lawler was there for the campy, dumb heel shtick instead of being legit like Jesse was. I mean, obviously, there's only one Jesse, and there will always only be one Jesse. But yeah, that would have been perfect. But sadly, the landscape changed, and that was, you know, with the attitude era, and that was one of the things. Nobody cares about real things like standings and shit. You and I are marks for that kind of thing.
Right, not even standings, but to say this is a big match. It's a WrestleMania match. I mean, this guy, he wins this match, he could get a title shot soon. Like, that's all. Just play it up a little bit.
Yeah, but sadly, the landscape of it, of commentating through the attitude era, doesn't, it's, nobody cares about that stuff. It's all about entertaining you with schlock and cheesy jokes, and sadly, that's what Lawler was good at the time. And was pin, you know, this whole, oh, who's got better hair? Oh, who gives a fuck? Seriously, stupid. Two good guys, too. Mm. We're not talking about two schlubs. We're talking about two good workers.
Yep.
It's even worse. So, but Edge gets the win. Booker will rehabilitate. But Edge gets himself set up for a great feud coming up. Great feud. One that changes both guys, I think. All right. Now we get to our controversial backstage rumblings match of the night, and the first involving the new world order. A great theme. I'm glad on the network, JR, they kept it. They kept the theme. I mean, obviously they can now because they owned it, but where do we see was it the DVD? No, the DVD must have it. Where have we seen it where they
The DVD's at the time. The DVDs at the time, they did not.
Right. Okay. That's what I figured.
Because I remember Backlash had that weird kind of version of it, remember?
Something like that. Weird riff.
I think it was on 18, though, on the DVD. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And I watched the show Saturday on the network, and everything was there. So. All right. Scott Hall, the bad guy. Now, he was the only other healthy NWO member as Kevin Nash had an injury. What a shock. And, of course, the other guy, we know what he was doing. So, we all know what happened at the end of No Way Out.
Mm-hmm.
The NWO came in the ring, cost Austin, Steve Austin, the title against Chris Jericho. On the 221 SmackDown, Austin attacked Hall in the ring, chased him in the aisle, clubbed him in the knee with a crowbar, and then almost ran him over with his truck. Very violent.
Yes, a lot of violence.
Very violent. NWO tried to escape in their limo, but found that Austin had slashed the tires. Jesus Christ. This is the mafia. Later that night, Austin brought a cameraman with him as he entered a large walk-in cooler. When they entered, Scott Hall was duct-taped to a chair, proceeded to taunt him with beer, which seemed a little, it's kind of mean. After Austin dragged Hall around the building, taunted him throughout, Nash and Hogan finally tracked them down, but Hogan clubbed them from behind. Austin clubbed him from behind and trapped him behind a fence. It's so weird. To close the show, Austin drove out Hall out to the ring, mocked him some more, and then dropped him with a stunner and spray-painted 316 on his back, like they spray-painted NWO on his back at No Way Out. Later that night, Hall officially issued the challenge for WrestleMania. Later that night, NWO assaulted Austin after his match with Mr. Perfect. But what a dream match that would have been, huh?
I was there live for that one.
That's right. They proceeded to bash Austin's knee with some cinder blocks and left him lying. Next week, the NWO got the last laugh again as they left Austin a bloody mess in the ring. Finally, on the final Raw before the show, Austin and Rock teamed up to battle Hogan, Hall, and Nash in a pretty badass handicap match right there.
Yep. One of the biggest Raw matches ever.
Yep.
I was at that Raw. I was in Providence, the Austin Perfect one. It was the first time I'd seen Hogan in person in WWF. Actually, I'd seen him in WCW once, but I'd never seen him in WWF ring live, so that was my first opportunity, and it was pretty cool.
No, it is very cool.
A lot of rumors, Scott, about this one. Many assume we get that huge dream match of Hogan-Austin at WrestleMania. Rumor has it that match is actually penciled in. At the time, the rumor was they couldn't agree on a finish, but as word has recently leaked out from Dave Meltzer, Austin didn't feel like Hogan would be able to hang with him. He thought they wouldn't be able to have the kind of match they wanted to have, and decided not to have it. Decided he'd rather face Scott Hall instead. And Austin would later say, probably a misfire. Probably not one of his best decisions, but with things already kind of switched around, Triple H already having the world title match, Austin kind of started to get a little fearful for his spot. And angry about being kind of low on the media totem pole now. He'd briefly walk out and refuse to show up on Raw the next night after the show, and eventually would return. Not the last time, though, he'd have issues in 2002. So a lot of kerfluffle going on.
Yes, big
with
kerfluffle.
Steve Austin. And, it seemed like he kind of shot himself in the foot a bit. Like, he could have had the match probably if he wanted it, decided not to, and then kind of got pissy about it. This seems like it should be a big match, but it doesn't really feel it, you know?
No, it doesn't, but it should be. I agree.
Right. It definitely feels like it should. Austin slipping into the mid-card. I did not like the build of this with the... I mean, I thought it was just stupid to tease the beer with Hall, a guy with known alcoholism problems. I mean, they weren't well hidden at this point.
So mean.
I know. They're like pouring beer on him or taunting him with it. It's like, come on, do we really need that? And then this awful fake cinder block busting over Austin's knee on the Raw I was at. Austin, though, still got a huge pop. Monster pop here. That's not gone. Nash comes out with Hall. As you mentioned, Nash was recovering from a biceps injury. He'd be in the ring shortly after this, but here he's still out. First Mania for Hall since WrestleMania 11, Scott.
That's right.
Been a while. Because remember, WrestleMania 12, he didn't want to do the street fight with Goldust. Or, you know, there's two sides to that story. One is that he was either suspended or, again, a recent piece by Dave Meltzer, who kind of went through all different Mania matches that never happened, said that he had nothing to gain from that match. He didn't really want to lose to Goldust before heading to WCW, so he pulled himself out. And so anyway, his last Mania match was that IC title match with Jeff Jarrett at Mania 11, so 7 years before. Austin started off super fast, rattled Hall, showed a lot of good energy. He seems to be moving better again, I thought, here, looking a little bit better than he did at No Way Out. So I don't know if he had a little bit of rest between these shows or just was starting to get the kinks worked out. Hall, I thought, was in great shape.
Mm-hmm.
He looked really good. And he was moving well, too. They worked a pretty nice pace. I was kind of surprised. I thought it was going to be a little bit more plodding. But they were moving at a pretty crisp pace here. Nash lands some shots on the floor, breaks up a stunner, and beats down Austin. A bunch of chaos. Nash wipes out the second ref. That was really funny. The ref comes into count. Nash just drops an elbow on him out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Vintage, of course, Razor's Edge spot near the ropes, going back to the old Razor Ramon days where he would tease that he was going to do the Razor's Edge, but it's too close to the ropes and go backdrop to the floor. Nash gets thrown out by the new ref. Both guys get visual pins with stunners. Hall does one of his own and gets a pin on Austin, but no count there. Austin wins. I thought it was a fine match, kind of fun in a messy way, nothing pretty, but it felt pretty empty for Austin here at Mania.
Yeah, I mean, he seemed out of place.
His most empty Mania match since what, Vega, Savio at 12?
Yeah, pretty much. No one remembers that because it was during the Goldust Piper shit. So that match is barely even remembered.
Yeah,
it is evident that he is not all himself.
See, I thought in the match though he seemed a little bit better. Like the Jericho match, I thought it was obvious. He was distracted. He seemed not with it. I thought here he seemed like Austin. It just didn't seem as big of a match as it should have been.
No, it shouldn't have. It should have.
I don't think the NWO worked hard here, despite their, you know.
Considering Nash was injured.
I thought he worked hard. I thought Hall worked really hard. I thought it was a decent match. I actually enjoyed it. It just felt like for Mania, again, similar. This is why I thought, you know, should we have just had Angle Austin at this point?
Do you think if Nash was not injured, Nash Austin would have been a bigger match?
Probably, but it wouldn't have been as good.
Mm-hmm.
Hall's better than Nash.
Yeah.
I think Nash, yeah, probably would have been a bigger match. I'm trying to think, is there a guy you could have put with Austin and made it a tag match? And you don't want to turn Angle back again. I can't really think anyone. The Big Show? I don't know.
Oh, God.
I can't really think anyone that would have fit well here if Nash was healthy. Jesus. But anyway.
I don't know.
Empty. Very empty feeling for Austin.
Yeah. I could see how he was feeling, but... I think Austin was being very short-sighted here. You're talking about the biggest match in the history of WrestleMania. Because let's be honest, and Rock fans will probably get upset about this, and that's their problem. When you look at the two of them during this run, it is evident who the bigger star... No, I shouldn't say bigger. It's evident who has one tick above the other. The Attitude Era will always be Austin's era. He was one. Rock was 1B. It'll always be that way. So Austin Hogan is the match that bridges the gap. It's the match that battles the guy who dominated one era versus the guy who dominated the other era, pure and simple. And I think Austin got very short-sighted only because he thought the match would suck. Well, you don't know if the match is going to suck or not. I don't know what the deal was. He was talking about worried about his spot. That would have been the biggest main event. I don't see how that match isn't last. You put those two together at this show, and Triple H and Jericho go like now. I don't see how you put Austin Hogan, if that was the match, I don't see how you put that anywhere else but last. You can't. Not if it's booked right.
Right. No, I agree.
You know?
And, I mean, Austin, short-sighted, yes, but I got to wonder how much of him didn't realize how seismically things were going to shift for him over the next year. So I wonder if he thought that match could still happen at some point. He just didn't know if now was the time. I mean, in the back of his mind, next year we'll do it. Like, I don't think everyone realized how short of a shelf life Hogan would end up having in 02. Like, it seemed like he was really refreshed coming back here.
Right.
And he had a pretty sustained run in WCW. It's not like he was coming off part-time runs. So
right.
I think in the back of his mind, he probably figured they could do it next year. Like, I think that probably seemed like a no-brainer. That I don't think Austin had any reason to think he would have issues that he would have, and Hogan would have the issues he would have. So I'm wondering if part of him figured, well, let's see how he does with Rock. Let me see how things go, and then we can always come back to it next year.
Right. Maybe. It's entirely possible.
And I mean, I guess we can get into it more when we get to Rock Hogan, but you know, we can debate if it would have been better or worse. But as is, this match ends up being fine. Just again, this roster is really loaded at this point, but some of the pairings are weird because we saw a lot of them throughout 01 and early 02, and it seemed like they're just trying to mix things up. So we end up with a lot of odd matchups and feuds that weren't really well fleshed out and didn't make completely 100% sense, and you kind of end up wasting guys like Angle, you know, third from the top, and Austin Hall in the middle of the card with not much going on. So, yeah, I feel like maybe there could have been more to it.
Mm. It's good, though, that the match, that I liked the match, because I was very rankled, because I really wanted to see Austin and Hogan. I was waiting for that moment, and I think everybody did. I know Dr. G certainly did. And it didn't happen, and it's disappointing. Now, look, I'm not saying Austin was wrong. I mean, if he was looking at it from it's a memorable match, but if the thing is the shits, that's what people remember, that the thing is the shits.
Right.
But sometimes you got to look past that. You got to look past work rate. I have this argument with my brother all the time.
Well,
you got to look past work rate sometimes and just realize, hey, these two guys will put on a moderately good match and just trust yourselves.
There had to be something more to it, though.
Hogan either.
There had to be a little bit to it more than that. Like, maybe that was the reasoning given, but deep down, maybe they just didn't trust Hogan.
Yeah. I mean, remember, that's the reason. A lot of people think it's pretty much the reason Hogan, you know, Austin left in 95.
Right.
In WCW. So, any event, Austin wins this one, though, and beats the snot out of the guys and walks up the ramp defiantly and proudly. So he does get a good moment. I mean, the crowd's hot for him.
Oh, yeah.
Still. So, in that aspect, he's not going away empty-handed, but you could tell there's still an emptiness in him. And that's unfortunate because he had a great 2001. I mean, what's funny about Austin is, and we'll talk more about this maybe when we do the next Mania Vault when he's done. But I don't think Austin realized at this point. Now, you see, the last time all these guys were healthy, Triple H and Angle, they were they were in the mid card, and he was the dog. He was the alpha male when he was at his, you know, 98, 99. You know, he was the alpha male, and these other guys were all mid card and growing. Austin comes back in 01, or, you know, 2000 into 01. He's the top heel, but now he's back to being a babyface.
Mm-hmm.
But the babyface side of the roster is very different than when he was the hottest babyface back in 99.
Right.
And I think he's like, whoa, who are all these? Triple H. Shouldn't he be like in the mid card fighting for the IC? Oh, wait a minute. An Angle. Well, I just made him a star. I helped make him a star. And Rock, and what the fuck's going on here? That's where I think his weird paranoia came in. Like, the last time he was a top flight babyface, he was the alpha male. His main antagonist was Vince,
right?
And I don't think he was used to it when the invasion ended and he went back to being a babyface in November and into December. And I think he got a little weird about it, you know. That's a good question to bring up to guys like Will and them. Mm. Really talk about Austin's, you know, why he was thinking this way in 2002. What was the genesis of it? I think it was because this is the first time since 99 that he was a full-blown top flight babyface, and the landscape of the roster has changed. He's not the alpha, you know, he was the alpha male, and now he's not. Now he's got to share the stage, and he's not thrilled. You know?
Mm-hmm.
But in any event, he wins a match here. Does not go to the post-WrestleMania party. That's also a big fact that came out later on. He, you know, the big party that Vince always throws after Mania for all the talent and everything. And him and Deborah just went home or went to the hotel. And as we talked about, didn't show up the next night, which was really weird. So we'll talk more about Austin as time progresses, because he's got a couple months, you know, a couple more pay-per-view matches before the shit really hits the fan. All right. Next up, we have our next title match of the evening, and that is the... Oh, what an awesome... You know, we could say what we want. I said this to you Sunday night when we were boneheads. I said, you know, for all as we make fun of Billy Gunn for his lack of talent or, you know, lack of wrestling ability or whatever, the guy never had a lousy theme song.
Right.
Ever. Well, Smoking Guns, you know, wasn't great, but Billy and Chuck finally end the reign of the young upstarts, your tag team champions. When did that happen, JR?
That happened on the 221 SmackDown. Billy and Chuck defeated Taz and Spike Dudley. This match was made official on 311. If you remember, the APA had earned a title shot due to the win at No Way Out, but then lost to Billy and Chuck on the 228 SmackDown, so that title match is gone. So they end up making a four-way here with Billy and Chuck defending now against the Dudley Boys, Acolytes, and the Hardy Boys. This whole thing turns into a clusterfuck. Saliva, which I thought was kind of cool, played the Dudley Boys out. Mm-hmm. Kind of made them feel like stars again. I like that. Kind of almost freshened them up in a way. Stacy was smoking hot, dancing on stage.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Did you think that the WrestleMania tag title standard had been raised to some ridiculous levels, putting these guys at a tough spot? Like, even though there's no ladder stip or anything, I feel like because of the multi-man tag reputation we've had the last couple of years, a lot of people were expecting this to be just as crazy and good.
Yeah,
I was. I remember I was thinking, oh, this should be really good. You know, Hardys, Dudleys, we'll get some wild brawling and everything else, and didn't quite get there.
Mm. First off, awesome alternate tights by Billy and Chuck.
Yes, usually the yellow
red
tights.
And white, and here they were yellow with red.
I like the white robes with them.
Yes, white robes, the terry cloth robes, yes. Chuck had... braided his hair.
Yes.
And he had pigtails.
Chucky.
They had good chemistry as a team, didn't they?
Yeah, I thought they were fine. I thought they should have done them and Taz and Spike here. I really do. And well, I don't know. I guess you gotta have the Hardys and Dudley somewhere. The APA seems so blah.
Ugh. Why are they still around?
And the Hardys even still bumming around. And it's just odd. I mean, in a way, I guess it's the official pass. Edge and Christian are gone, but it's kind of the passing of the torch to Billy and Chuck. I agree with you. They had a good tag look, good chemistry. And again, in this match, Bradshaw showcase continues, too. A lot of showcasing of Bradshaw. All APA and Billy and Chuck early. Bradshaw gets all the shine, and the APA goes down first, and kind of their swan song. Back to the Hardys and Dudleys yet again. Jeff took his shirt off. He thought he looked like a skinny backyard wrestler. Kind of looked like flat.
Yeah, he looked bad. Yeah, he didn't look good at all.
Expected Doc Holliday to come out with him. Another fine match. Doesn't stand out. Solid enough. Hardy Boys win the war. Kind of the end of an era in the feud.
Mm-hmm.
Finally putting that thing away. and then Billy and Chuck would win, defeat the Hardys, who the crowd was pretty into at the end. And I thought this was really a transition show for the tag team division. Like, the old guard is all busted up over the next couple weeks, finally. And Billy and Chuck now win and kick off the new era. So the Hardys, Dudleys, Edge and Christian, APA, all no longer a team within the next couple weeks. So finally, we put this thing to bed about 2.5 years after it launched. And, yeah, okay match, but again, kind of disappointing because I think the bar had been raised severely here.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't terrible. I mean, they got a lot of time. They got almost 14 minutes. And it was good. I mean, is it 16 or 17? Absolutely not. But still really good. I didn't hate it. And you definitely see a changing of the guard here. Mm. Sure, Billy Gunn is an old school tag team guy, but this is a fresh team.
Right.
And
something different.
I was just so Dudley'd and Hardy'd out. Yeah. I was just done.
Even though the Dudleys have gotten a nice balance with Stacy and with the music and with the band here, like, you know, they did seem freshened up a bit. Things needed to change in the tag division. And finally, we get it. We thought we were going to get it in late 01. We didn't. And now these teams, the stalwarts since late 99, are all finally gone and the division. Now, I'm not saying this for the better. We'll see how the year goes. But for now, it seemed like it was something that was really needed to be done. Mm. And this match finally brings an end to that run, the renaissance of the tag division.
Yep, I agree 100%. And
when would you say, I guess it launched at No Mercy 99, I would say.
Yeah, yeah, it launched at No Mercy 99, yep, when they had the TIT.
And the Dudleys had just debuted, the Acolytes are slowly starting to turn towards the APA. So to me, that was when the rebirth of the tag division officially fired up.
Mm-hmm. And now it dies out here. Well, it dies out, but this is pretty much the last chapter because, like you said, over the next few months, the tag division really kind of churns and burns a little bit, which it needed to happen. You know, you just need cleansing after a while, you know? Mid-card, tag, diva, main event. All those sections of the roster always need a cleansing. And it was clear that the tag division really needed a cleansing here. And it's an elimination match, as mentioned. And after a heel tag belt shot by Billy, he pins Jeff, and Billy and Chuck retain the World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Championships, which is perfectly fine with me. They deserved it.
Yep.
Love those yellow tights, the red. I don't know. I was in a real, you know what I mean, just like belts and cities. I'm in the mark for tights and robes and stuff. And all the tights on that night were very cool. RVD had like this, you know, like a red heavy.
Right. Yeah, a lot of special
things
going
on. Yeah, definitely. Well, our Divas match actually has a pretty cool touch with it, but we'll get to that in a minute. All right, so they go. Billy and Chuck keep the titles.
And then backstage, Hogan's back there getting ready for his match, and Hall and Nash come up. And Hogan asked him to stay in the back. He wants to prove himself that he's the man. Doesn't want to leave Rock any excuses for why he's going to win. Hogan walks off, and Nash says they'll still be involved. Don't worry about it. And him and all basically tease that they'll show up at some point.
Yep.
Elsewhere, Molly Holly, and I think we skipped over this actually, Scott. Molly Holly had won the hardcore title. She jumped Hurricane earlier in the night.
Yes, yeah, right before the Austin Hall match. Yep.
Yeah, so she's the new hardcore champ. She's running away, but then she runs into like this weird half door thing where
barn door.
Yeah, both the top and bottom are separate pieces. Christian, it turns out to be, slams the top half of the door. She slams into it, falls down. He appears, covers her, and wins the hardcore title. So now Christian, bouncing back from his earlier loss, as you talked about, Scott, is now our new hardcore champion at this point.
And Molly won it. She crushed Hurricane with a frying pan.
Yes, yeah, she got
fucking
good.
Knocks him cold. It was really cool. All right, let's take a break because we've got three matches left, and two of them are ginormous. And this next one obviously is the biggest of all. But first, a word, because
promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week, placetobenation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
What's that? Chad, Do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on PlaceToBeNation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, this sounds terrible. The Titans are wrestling. Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans are wrestling off.
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pop. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling. You know you want to hear it.
All right, Nation, we're back going through WrestleMania 18. I'm going to tell you just to head over to PlaceToBeNation.com for all your WrestleMania 30 coverage. We had a lot of pregame, postgame, and not just WrestleMania 30, all kinds of WrestleMania lists and articles. And if you're still getting that WrestleMania fever, that feeling, we had tons of it up. And as Scott also mentioned, coming off a red-hot Raw, make sure you go back and read Brad Wilding's review as well. So head over to PlaceToBeNation.com. If you have any interest in writing for us, info@PlaceToBeNation.com. Hit us up on Facebook at Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation. Twitter, Place2BNation. Mm-hmm. All right, Scott, as you mentioned, we got three matches left, a couple of big ones, and the biggest one is upon us.
Yes. All right. Get us started.
You want me to get us started?
Yeah, go ahead.
You want me to say what the match is?
Well, we know what the match is. Well, let's do it differently. Let's do it differently than we do with our other matches.
Okay.
We go back to No Way Out first.
All right, well, I'll pick it up from here if that's what
you
want.
Yeah, go ahead. Okay. We'll start there.
Rock and Hogan in the NWO had a confrontation backstage, leading to The Rock hilariously ripping on all three men. The next night on Raw, Rock interrupted Hogan's promo and challenged him to a battle of megastars at WrestleMania. Hogan accepted. They shook hands. Rock kept hold and hit Hogan with a rock bottom. But before he left the arena, Hall and Nash ambushed him, spray painted on his back. As medics were loading Rock into the ambulance, the NWO pounced, chained up all the possible exits. Hogan pulled up in a giant big rig, drove into the ambulance with the Rock trapped inside. And you would think Rock was dead, right? I mean, that's how it should have been. But no, on the March 7th SmackDown, Rock made his return, immediately challenged Hogan to a fight. Nash and Hall held Hogan back, and Hall challenged Rock instead. The match would end in a 3-on-1 beatdown that was eventually stopped by Stone Cold in a chair. And as you mentioned earlier, Scott, on the March 11th Raw, Rock and Austin took on the NWO, and Hogan pinned Rock after a leg drop. Many people questioned if Rock and Hogan should have actually wrestled prior to the show and wondered if it would affect our intrigue heading in here. I would say no, because I didn't even remember they touched. I remember they had that match, but I thought for some reason they kept them apart. But I remember there was a lot of hand-wringing and a lot of people like, what the fuck, that they had them wrestle the week before and Hogan actually pinned Rock.
Do you remember any of that? Yeah, I do. I think they were trying to add some kind of, you know, intrigue or whatever. Well, for the first time since June 13th, 1993, Hulk Hogan is at a wrestling on a WWF pay-per-view.
Yep.
Of course, that night he lost the WWF title to the awesome Yokozuna.
Yokozuna, the big Jap.
Yakazuma. And then we still don't know who the guy with the mask that flashed fire in Hogan's eyes. And of course, this is his first WrestleMania match since the infamous April 4th, 1993, WrestleMania 9 in Vegas, when Hogan walked in, shook, and Brett said, whatever, do whatever you want, and took the WWF title. This is his 10th WrestleMania match, JR.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, 11th. 11th WrestleMania match. 7-2-1 going in. His two losses, of course, to
Warrior,
WrestleMania 6. And why am I brain farting?
Money Inc., right? Did they lose that or did they win that?
Oh, no, Money Inc. No, that was by Money Inc. won by DQ. Yes, you're right. So Warrior at 6 and Money Inc. at 9. And the draw was obviously Hogan and Andre in the tournament at WrestleMania 4.
Scott, mega dream match.
Oh, absolutely.
Is it the right choice? You've kind of already talked about this. Obviously, it wasn't their call. It seemed like they wanted Austin, but Rock was a pretty good second choice. I thought the build was weird. I thought they could have just been straightforward without all the shenanigans. I didn't think we needed them running Rock over in the ambulance. Ends up kind of being a joke because he came back a couple weeks later fine. It seemed very over the top. Like, I don't know why it couldn't have just been a match between two greats. Like, I don't know why we needed all the paraphernalia in the back.
Right.
One thing was for sure, Hogan's still a great promo.
Yes. Absolutely.
Crowd was super jacked for him.
Unbelievable. And that, I just want to mention this quickly and then you continue your point. That's one reason where I think, believe it or not, Rock would have fit better than Austin. And I'll explain that in a second. But go ahead, keep going, continue.
The biggest Hogan pop since when, Scott?
Beating Slaughter at 7?
Probably, right?
Mm. I mean, 8 was a shit show at the end. Right. I think Warrior's pop was more than his.
And you return a Raw to the Manhattan Center, so not exactly a conducive to a major pop.
And 9 is...
And I don't think anything in WCW, he got... I mean, maybe his first match with Flair.
His debut at Bash the Beach?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe a little. But
maybe
hit
that. The only one I thought was maybe close when he came out on Nitro with Back in the Red and Yellow.
What was that? 99?
Yeah. That was a pretty crazy pop. But we haven't had many like this. Crowd was pretty split and rowdy early, but things swung very fast. And I thought this is, Scott, really as big of a Mania moment as you're going to get. I mean, Hogan Andre... This, I think it's bigger than Hogan Warrior, probably, right, at the time, when you look at it. Hogan overpowers out of the lockup, and the crowd's just going fucking batshit. he throws Rock down. And I thought Hogan was moving great. He was really feeding off the crowd, and I thought I thought Austin probably immediately realized he was wrong, because I thought Hogan was just looked fine. And I loved, I don't know if you picked up on this, using the Thunder Lips taunts. Kept saying, "You ain't nothing, meatball," because his Rock.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you picked up on that. He kept saying that when he was beating on him. I thought that was awesome. Rock was immediately into his full heel, minutes into the match, going full heel. He played into it. Crowd was molten for every move, booing the Rock, crazy for Hogan. Everything was simple and effective. Every move resonated. Rock, actually, one of the best sharpshooters he's done, surprisingly enough, on Hogan's brittle back.
Yes.
But Hogan visually taps out. Get a great near fall where Hogan hitting the Rock bottom on Rock. And then I thought was probably, arguably, the biggest pop in WrestleMania history. When Hogan gets hit with the Rock bottom, pops up, hulks up, hits the big boot, the leg drop, and Rock kicked up there. But I thought from the moment he hulked up to when he hit the leg drop was pure insanity.
Oh my God, the place went fucking insane. It was apocalyptic.
Can you think of another one as big as that? I mean, I guess Hogan slamming Andre. I don't know. This was fucking crazy.
It was bonk. It was batshit. I mean, to use the term you used a few seconds ago. It was batshit. Crowd was out of their skin.
And I
remember being you. I mean, obviously you were in a chaotic room in the dorm. I was at our friend Mike's house, and I was almost in tears. I mean, I was literally almost in tears. I was getting so emotional, like, oh my God, I feel like I'm 12 years old again.
I mean, if you want to say, and if you don't want to say, it's like the most sustained individual pop. I mean the biggest individual pop. It's going to be the biggest sustained pop of minutes in Mania history.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, they were just crazy from. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I never seen anything like it. Just watching it again, I was sucked right back in. Like I said before, room 60 was just exploding. Everyone going crazy for Hogan. All drunk out of our mind at this point, 3 hours into the show. Rock finishes hard and gets the win. Crowd not happy for the win, but they still kind of pop for the finish. Hogan, of course, had the busted ribs. Do you think he should have gone over here? Because I mean, we were pissed at the time. I can't think of a reason why he should have.
You kidding? The reason why he should have gone over?
Yeah, like I think it's fine that Rock went over.
I think it needed to happen. Regardless of the fact that they obviously, when they were planning this and when they were backstage, they obviously knew the crowd was going to be a majority of the crowd was going to be very pro Hogan. I mean, you'd be pretty stupid not to figure that out anyway.
I think they figured, though, Rock winning, he wouldn't get booed out of the building. Like, they would still appreciate Rock winning. Like, I don't think they realized at this point Rock was going for the length of amount of time he'd be gone for. Like, I think they thought he may be kind of part-time, but still a guy that needed to win this match. I can't think of a reason why Hogan should have gone over other than just to placate the Toronto fans. It really would have made no sense for Hogan to beat Rock.
No. No. I will say that, and this is a point I brought up earlier, I don't think that Austin in this spot, as much as it was the more appropriate match, I don't know if he could have adapted as well to the him getting booed and Austin getting cheered.
Austin?
I don't know if he would have. I mean, Hogan, I mean.
Oh, you don't know if Hogan could have adapted?
No, I don't think Austin would have adapted.
Right.
To Hogan, Rock, not that Austin doesn't appreciate history, but Rock wasn't fucked over in WCW in 1995, you know what I'm saying? So I don't know if Austin could have. I don't know if the emotion in the match would have been the same. Because I think everyone knew that at the end of the night, regardless of whether or not Rock or Hogan won, that the crowd was going to be ridiculously over for Hogan.
Well, do you think the crowd would have been more split with Austin?
I don't know.
I feel like they may not have booed him. The chairs for Austin would have been... Hogan would have out-popped Austin probably, but I don't know if the crowd would have booed Austin like they turned quickly on Rock.
Yeah. I think you would have had a different dynamic during that match. And I don't know if Austin would have stood there and I don't think he would have... I mean, look, Austin's a pro. I'm not saying he would have done anything bad, but I don't know if he would have sat there and let Hogan do his Hulk ups and all that shit. And
I think you would have.
Well, they're both pros.
Yeah. I don't think that would have been a problem.
They're equals. You know, Austin doesn't. This was my other whole issue. And Dr. G and I used to talk about this constantly. I don't think, like, Austin's chip on his shoulder should have been a lot smaller now. I mean, the guy's one of the greatest ever, if not the greatest. He may have usurped Hogan as the number one guy ever, period. Having said that, he should have gone to the ring and said, look, man, this is my world now. This isn't 1988. You're in my ring now. I'm not in yours. You're in mine.
Well, I think you got to look at it like this, too. I think you have to say, you know, are you looking at this battle of legends, icon versus icon, in the world of wrestling? Then you probably say, well, Austin would have been bigger. Or you're looking at it saying the biggest transcendent stars, crossover star, like, then you can start to say Rock now is the bigger match. Like, him and Hogan are more equal on that plane. So, but this was, to me, easily an all-time great immediately. Easy win that carries the show. It was a spectacle, lots of back and forth. And I thought it was actually a perfect 5-star match, worked perfectly for these two. I don't think they needed to do anything more. I thought they did exactly what they needed to do to make this match work. It was a passing of the torch moment at the end with the handshake, and this is what I meant earlier, Scott, with a tie-in to WrestleMania 6, kind of flashing back to Hogan passing the torch to Warrior and they hug in the ring, and you kind of got the same thing here. Yeah. And when Chris and I edited our piece together, we harkened back to it at the end, and we actually blended the two scenes together. We showed Hogan and Warrior embracing, blended into Hogan and Rock, because that was immediately what came into my mind. Same building, same kind of match. Where do you rank this, Scott, in the biggest Mania matches ever list?
Well, we ranked it. Well, no, we never actually ranked matches like that. We usually pretty much ranked title matches and stuff. But in terms of historical significance, you got to put this right there with Hogan Andre.
Right.
I think you have to.
Bigger than Hogan Warrior?
Yeah. Hogan Warrior was the title for title, but there was no, at the time, there was no global pro wrestling significance like Hogan Andre was. You know what I'm saying?
It was a big deal in the wrestling world.
Yeah. But Hogan Andre transcended to mainstream like Hogan.
And I think the one main event is up there too.
That just popped into my head. Yeah. Yep. Because that was, Saturday Night Live and the newspapers. And I remember
it's
all
up
over
there. It's definitely a top three, if not top two.
It's got to be.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's any question that if Austin was there instead, I think you definitely would have had a different emotional dynamic. I don't think Hogan's pops would have been any lower, any smaller or bigger. But you're right. I don't think you would have seen as many sustained boos when Austin would be on offense. But Austin definitely screwed the pooch on this one. I think he underestimated Hogan's, athletic ability. I think their match would have been fine. I think a match between the two of them would have been fine. What was Hogan to do? Wrestle like he would have wrestled Kurt?
I don't know.
Come on, Steve. Adapt a little bit. He's not Kurt. He's not Rock 99. He's not Brett. Come on. you adapt a little bit,
Well, Hull and Nash come out after. They actually attack Hogan. Hogan turns face. Rock makes a save. Do you think this is too soon to bust up the NWO?
Well, Nash and Hall said they were going to come out. They could have skipped all that jazz.
Right.
And you could have had...
Did they have to turn Hogan face immediately? I guess so. I guess you got to strike while the iron's hot. Do you think that was ad-libbed? I would definitely want to ask Kevin this one. I don't know if you can mark it down, but I want to know if this was pre-planned or not. Because I've seen it both. I assume it was. I assume they knew that Hogan was going to get this pop, so they planned to turn him face. But I've always been curious if they kind of ad-libbed the end and had him go face because of it. And then, of course, you get the vintage Mania moment with the pose down with Hogan and Rock after.
Mm.
Just an epic scene from top to bottom.
Yeah, I think it was definitely ad-libbed.
You think so?
To a certain extent. Like I said, I think it was pretty clear that everyone knew that Hogan was going to get serious face pops here. I think part of it was. I wouldn't say it totally was, but I'd say part of it was. I think the whole posing at the end and that kind of thing, I think it was partially ad-libbed. I don't know what would have happened in the NWO coming out. Maybe it wasn't totally ad-libbed. Yeah, definitely a question for Kevin. Because you got to look at it from two angles. Obviously, if it wasn't planned, when else would the NWO have come out? Would they have come out during the match? Why do they wait till after the match is over?
Right.
They said they were going to get involved. Why did they wait till the end?
Because they're not involved.
Yeah, well, neither of them were wearing pink polo shirts. So,
all right.
They weren't going to Sizzler with their aunt, but I don't know.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's one we'll definitely ask Kevin.
I jotted it down. Definitely for Kevin.
Okay. So, all-time classic, a great match, easy five-star. Yep. They wrestled the exact match they should have wrestled. I can't think of anything else they should have done differently. They didn't need any brawling. They didn't need weapons. They don't hide. Like, nothing was needed besides what they delivered. The crowd was just in the palm of their hands the whole time. And Hogan, back with a bang, sir, surprisingly enough. And again, the nostalgia era, fully underway now at this point, with Hogan back into relevance. So, speaking of relevance, Scott, we had to WWE New York, WWF New York, where the Big Show is meeting children. Very sad.
Meeting, eating.
Yes, both. But very sad. This guy just hanging out in WWF New York instead of being at WrestleMania. Who would have thought 3 years earlier?
So sad. He couldn't even make the hardcore match this year. They stuck him in it the year before. They couldn't even stick him there.
You're not even good enough for the hardcore match. Nothing, yeah. Just terrible.
Pitiful. All right. Another title match. Mm-hmm. Jesus. How many did we have on this show?
It's like WrestleMania 4.
I know. 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah. 6 title matches on this show.
Yep.
And this is the 5th. The World Wrestling Federation Women's Championship on the line, and the title has changed, JR, since we last saw a women's title match on pay-per-view.
Jazz was victorious.
Yes, Trish Stratus no longer women's champion. Before No Way Out.
Yes,
on
February 4th
Raw. Yes, Jazz won the title, which you knew was going to happen eventually.
Spot of death here for these three ladies.
Yeah, Jazz, but Lita, sadly, yeah. Could you think of any other match?
No. Something had to go here, and this was it. I mean, it actually was a shrewd move, because Trish gets a nice reception because it's her hometown. So it kind of saves it a little bit. And she was hot with her red and white Canadian flag outfit on.
Yes, that was awesome.
Great looking tights. So I think that was the reasoning for this here, not just because it's a women's match, but also because they figured the crowd would maybe at least come back a little bit because of Trish. Mm-hmm. I don't know what else. Maybe the tag title match. Maybe Edge Booker in the Snuka Rude kind of feeling. That's all I can think of is maybe those couple matches.
Yeah.
So Trish gets a nice reception. Jazz takes control early, gets some pretty good shots. Actually, those are a decent match, but the crowd just wanted no part of it. Jazz really busted it, got some good near falls. I thought Trish's strikes and timing, again, continuing to improve. And I thought she actually surpassed Lita by this point, outside of some high spots. I thought her overall work was actually getting superior to Lita's in the ring. I thought her strikes looked better. I thought her timing was better. Some of the moves she executed were better. I also had Lita's moonsault and a couple of the high-flying moves. I thought Trish was actually becoming the better women wrestler here.
Well, Trish's moveset is a little more grounded and basic.
Mm.
Lita still works a little recklessly. Lita's kind of more in the Jeff mold.
Yeah.
So Trish definitely kind of works very basic.
Right, but and that's how far she's come, though. I mean,
oh, absolutely. That's my point. Yo, no, I agree. Yeah. All I'm saying is I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying that Trish, the way she has trained herself or has been trained is to be a little more basic, a little more grounded, kind of like Brett. I'm watching actually a Brett match right now in the Studio B. Kind of the Brett style, very basic, very all right, methodical.
Let's not go too far down the path of comparing 2002 Trish Stratus to Bret Hart, but
let's
pump the brakes.
No, I'm not saying that they'd have a great match. My point is Brett's style as a how do I word this without putting my foot in my mouth?
More of a technician, and
she's very methodical.
Yeah,
Lita's not methodical. She's like Jeff. She throws herself all over the place and hopes just kill herself
out of control.
Yeah, but I agree with you. Lita has not been able to contain that. Like,
Lita's not improved. Lita's what she was when she started wrestling.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
She hasn't changed.
There's only one way she works,
right.
And Trish has been able to surpass her because she's a lot more methodical. She's very different. She still does some kind of reckless stuff,
right?
But not too bad.
And I thought one of the best spots of the match, Jazz had a nice fisherman's buster off the top rope. I thought that was really cool.
Yes, that was very nice.
Kind of weird not to have Trish win here. But I think the crowd was gone anyway, and they wanted to keep Jazz strong. So I kind of got it. I mean, on the surface, it was like, all right, well, why did they bury Trish in her hometown? But I think they needed Jazz to win. I think she needed some wins, and I think it wouldn't have mattered. Like, I don't think they killed the crowd because Trish lost here. I think the crowd was already kind of lost.
Yeah, they were shot, and Trish will get her chance again. It's not like, you know, she's not buried or anything. It's something had to go here.
Right.
Pure and simple. And, you know, they worked hard. I mean, they go just over 6 minutes, 6:16.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they told a good story. It was not offensive, but yeah, the crowd was gassy. They were either taking a piss or just kind of walking around and kind of getting themselves ready for the main event after what they just witnessed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember watching it Saturday. I mean, that was almost a 40-minute segment, really.
Yeah.
Opens and, you know, the match itself, the after stuff with Rock and the NWO and everything. That whole piece was almost 40 minutes.
Right.
So the crowd needed to kind of, you know, get a little juice back. They did have one match left, big one. So this was the time for them to get up, go, you know, take a leak and stretch their legs and everything before they go back to their seats. So sad, but that's okay. You know, Lita's, Jazz is awesome, retains the women's championship, and more will come from them. They'll get their stage again. It's okay. Nothing, you know, we're not getting mad at them or we're not dogging them or anything. Something had to go here. And just like this past Sunday night, when the AJ Invitational went after that epic the Taker match, something's got to go in that spot.
Yeah, there's
that spot. Yeah. Yes, you could be very politically incorrect or correct and say why did the women's match always have to go there? But
no, there's a clear reason why I went there, and it's fine. I don't think we need to dwell on it any longer.
No.
So backstage, Maven shows back up, sneaks up behind Christian, rolls him up, and regains his hardcore title. He hops in Christian's car and speeds away as Christian stands flabbergasted. So we end where we began with the hardcore novel, and Maven is now back to being your hardcore champion.
And, JR, we have breaking sports news.
Oh. The Canucks fired their president?
Happening, yep, and Scott Keith is the new head of the Canucks now. 10 years after this school did it the first time.
Oh, who cares? Jesus Christ.
The University of Connecticut. Women?
It's not that impressive. The women win it every fucking year. So if the men fall into it, then it's obviously going to happen. You know,
fall into it.
Well, it's not like the women. It's not like the women only win once in a fucking millennium. I mean, they win every goddamn year. So it's
That's true too.
You know, obviously, if the women win every year, the men just are the ones that you got to pull it off. So
yes,
that's how, I don't think it's that impressive.
But this was a special one because it was the first time in NCAA women's history that two undefeateds faced each other. Yeah. And UConn won by 21. Okay. So.
Well, that's where it should be, right before the main event. So,
and the Mets, and the Mets shut the Braves out tonight.
Yeah, again,
which never
something
happens.
Else no one cares about. And the empty fucking stadium in Atlanta.
Yeah, well, that's
Chad
a mess.
Campbell and his family were there. That was about it.
All right, who cares about all that stuff? Because now it's time to get to the real main event of this show. Rock Hogan gives a shit.
So the main event in your world.
Main event in my world, and my world's the one that matters. All right. We go back to No Way Out, where Triple H lost to Kurt Angle and wasn't even slated for this match.
Mm-hmm.
However, the next night on Raw, Ric Flair, co-owner, interesting, decided enough of these goddamn shenanigans. Triple H gets a rematch, and they wrestle again. No Stephanie. She's barred from ringside, and Triple H wins and gets his spot back. All right.
Let me cover this. Let me cover this. On the February 21st episode of SmackDown, Jericho met with Stephanie to put their differences in the past. Stephanie accepted Jericho's proposals to be new business partners. To further feud, Jericho mused that he ended the marriage by causing Triple H's quad muscle to tear in 2001, furthering the divide and the feud. Of course, that meant Triple H's attention had been diverted from his wife because he had to go down to rehab, and that's what also led to the divorce. And the divorce settlement for the two, it was announced that the assets would be split in half, much to Stephanie's disgust. Amongst the assets split were Triple H's first wrestling robe, Stephanie's Corvette, which Triple H later gave it to back to her with half of it cut off, and Triple H's bulldog, Lucy. Lucy the dog. Stephanie managed to win Lucy in the settlement, and later on the March 11th Raw, she sent Jericho to walk the dog. And angry Jericho tied Lucy to the limousine and ordered the unknowing driver to buy some air fresheners. The driver left and ended up running over Lucy into critical condition by accident. A livid Triple H stormed out of Scott Griscola's bed, stomped down to the arena, and tried to attack Stephanie, but the assault was negated by an assault by Chris Jericho with some chair shots to the leg. On the following SmackDown, Stephanie noted that the chair shots had left Triple H's quad in condition that one false move could re-injure his quad once again, meaning Scott had to be on top. No. As noted at the end of the show, Triple H and Jericho had a brawl in the ring that almost ended with a pedigree on Stephanie. However, Jericho saved her and locked the walls of Jericho on Triple H. Scott, as the biggest Triple H apologist and lover of all things game, and I mean all things, defend Lucy the dog for me.
I didn't like her. Things stunk. Shit on the sheets. No, I'm gonna... this was... The part of the storyline where I think the highlight of the storyline for me was when Jericho said that he caused the breakup of the marriage because he injured Triple H in May and distracted him, and that's why they got divorced. I thought that was actually pretty ingenious. Everything else is shit. You know, I gotta. Stephanie's telling Jericho to go get shampoo. I mean, what the fuck?
It was dumb. They completely
so stupid.
I agree with you. I was fine with Stephanie being involved, but she should have been a pawn for Jericho, not the other way around. Jericho should have been using her to get back at Triple H, not her using Jericho to get back at Triple H. It made Jericho just look like even more of a pussy.
Look like a putz.
Yeah, and his reign has completely shit the bed now. It was starting to be rehabbed around the Rumble with The Rock, but Austin and Triple H have double teamed it into oblivion, and it needed to end here at this point. I thought Triple H's entrance was pretty cool with the live performance by Drowning Pool. Solid pop. The crowd's still a bit spent. JR, of course, pushes the quad hanging on a thread immediately and throughout the whole match, which I thought was actually good. Like, I was fine. I liked the story of the match. I liked that part
exactly.
of it. And I also liked that they pretty much toned the Stephanie shit down, like, immediately. Like, none of that really played much of a role till the end. A lot of it was just Jericho working the leg, which I thought was fine. They you know, other than King and stuff mentioning it here and there, they didn't. All that shit was forgotten, and Jericho looked credible, I thought, in this match. More so than you might have thought or remembered. Jericho's crowning moment was his entrance here. I know he's sharing it with Steph, but this is the moment he had been waiting for. It enters WrestleMania as the world champion. Comes in second and gets his moment. You know, again, them together is okay in the storyline. Positioning of the storyline is what the problem was. Triple H used the knee offense, but it ended up hurting him. But it's all he knows, Scott. It's all he knows how to do. Nice bump from Jericho off the top rope. He slammed into the barricade and bounced off of it into the crowd. And he's working hard. Both guys really were trying to bring the crowd back. Triple H started to work Jericho's leg to even the field, all while selling his own quad. I thought, I'll give Triple H pops here, too. I thought he did a great job selling the quad throughout the match. Jericho went right back to the leg as soon as he took over, targeting it. Did the figure four around the ring post. Very focused assault. The crowd wasn't dead, but there was no buzz. You know what I mean? Like, they were popping for the big moves. There was no sustained pop for it.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
There was no... The excitement was there. But they were reacting. They weren't flat. They were reacting.
Yeah, they were toast, though. They were toast.
And you can't blame them. Jericho really needed a stronger walls here. I thought that was weak. He did one of the weak-ass sit-back. I mean, this is one where he should have just sucked it up and wrenched it in tight to really put over the quad, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
JR, by this point, was over the fucking way over the top.
He's screaming. And it seemed very contrived. Because, again, the crowd was absolutely gassed.
Yeah.
They had nothing left to give. It had been a long night. Emotions were going up and down. They just, not only did Hogan Rock happen, but their girl just lost. I mean, let's take that a little bit into account, that they thought, oh, they have a little happy ending here and Trisha win the title and she lost. So, I'm not saying it's a huge deal, but I mean, it was, you know, it just happened. So, right. I mean, they were a little upset.
Yeah, it just happens. But yeah, they, way over the top. You're right. I think contrived is the perfect word. They were trying too hard to make a moment.
Yep.
And I know it's not always Triple H's fault, but it seems like he's always involved in these situations where guys are trying too hard to make a moment. But it definitely felt like they were working to make it memorable. Like Austin at 14 and 15, Shawn at 12. Like they were trying to follow Bret at 10. They're trying to follow that lineage of making this a WrestleMania moment. Savage at 4. You know, like they were really working hard to make it in line with that. And JR just crazy overselling the quad. Stephanie tries to draw the DQ, and then we get a quick flurry coming off of that. Pedigree for the win. The music jacks up, and the pop was okay when he won, but did you notice how quickly they fired the music up and how loud it was? I thought trying to cover maybe a little bit for the dead crowd. Like, I feel like the music was super, super loud at this point.
It was super loud. It was super loud. Look, the story was fine.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh, yeah, the psychology.
Yeah, exactly. And you know.
That's all we needed.
That's all we needed. Wins the Rumble. I mean, his pop of the Rumble was awesome. But I don't know if I like the whole losing the title shot in a way. I never thought I liked that. I didn't like it.
No,
I didn't like it in 2000.
They gummed up the whole thing.
Yeah, they did.
He should have won the Rumble. Jericho beats him up the night after. His quad is on, you know, they don't know what's going to happen. Can he make it? Maybe he has a tag match or something, no way out. His quad's still banged up, heading in. Like, make Jericho look like a threat. Instead, we get all this happy horse shit with Stephanie and the dog and the fucking, you know, divorce. And it's just was not needed. It was not needed.
Although, during this stretch, he did fire off the greatest line ever. We talked about it, no way out, though. It was the ceremony and the... I am here to tell you for what you truly are. a no good line, bitch.
Yeah,
this is the best. I mean, that was great, but that was fine.
Right. I feel like they should have sped up that part of it and ended that at No Way Out with Stephanie, and then just focused these last 4 weeks on Jericho.
Right. Or instead of Stephanie being, and I, what you said earlier, instead of Stephanie being the manipulator, make Jericho the manipulator. Take advantage of Stephanie's her vulnerability at this point, that her husband shunned her,
right,
and use her as a pawn.
Yes,
instead
exactly.
Of her being the master manipulator. Right. I mean, it just didn't.
Yeah, make Jericho right. Make Jericho the strong one, the conniving champion. Make Stephanie.
Exactly.
Instead of the other way around. I think this match may be better than you remember, and not you, but people out there. no, I'm serious. I think it's one that's always chalked up to being, well, the crowd didn't care and the match sucked. But I don't think that's the case at all. I thought the match was actually pretty good. I thought they worked a really smart match, and I thought it made perfect sense within the angle and the injury, and they worked hard. I thought both guys worked really hard, and I thought it was a fitting WrestleMania main event, just not for this WrestleMania.
Yeah, and... I've watched this match, God, how many times now? Because I watched it Saturday. I watched it off the network, and then last week, the newest or the most recent episode of WrestleMania Rewind was this match, and I watched it then again. So I really paid attention to the match the last couple times, and it really isn't that bad. It's not great. It's not five stars by any stretch, and. JR going ridiculously over the top does kind of take away from it a little bit. But if you just watch it in a vacuum, it's a good match. It's as good as you're going to get. The other problem is if this was Triple H 2000, the match would be incredible, like their last man standing at Fully Loaded. But because he was so fucking geeked,
right?
Upper body, because that's all he could work out in the 8 months because he couldn't do anything with his lower body because his leg was shot. He's just so... jacked and bloated.
But I thought he actually moved around okay here. Like, I don't know. I liked the match. I did. I just felt like the crowd was just... You needed to have Hogan Rock last. There was no two ways about it. You can say all you want, and you could say it was hindsight, 2020, whatever. But you had to know heading in that Hogan Rock was the match. And I know it sucked. Bad timing for Triple H, his big moment. Have it two spots before this where Hogan Rock was. It's still close to the top. I'm not saying you have to have it third or fourth.
And they both said, Triple H and Jericho both said that they were really freaking out, like, oh, shit, right. They've even said that their match should have been earlier on. Yeah. Because if you're thinking to yourself, getting back to Hogan and Rock, if Austin Hogan was going to be last, which it most definitely would have been, no ifs, ands, buts, is Rock that much lower on the scale of Austin? I didn't say. I mean, I know. I think he is a notch below.
I don't think that had anything to do with it. I think they just wanted the world title last, and Triple H's big story. If he wasn't coming back off an injury, winning the title, they may have done it. I think they just wanted that to be the last match.
Right.
I think that's all it was. I don't think it had anything to do with Rock not being a perceived star or anything like that. I just think maybe they didn't realize how insane the crowd was going to be for that one, but I think they also just wanted to have the title match last. That's all. So overall, Scott, a weird card. It felt like a lot of empty matches that we've talked about, you know?
Yeah.
Quick builds, empty matches, empty calories. I feel like nothing besides Hogan Rock was great. I feel like we had a lot of very good matches, a lot of decent, solid matches. Nothing bad. We really didn't have any bad matches, I didn't think. I thought everything was fine.
No, everything was fine. The only match that really I got nothing out of at all was Edge and Booker.
Right.
Every other match I really...
But even that wasn't bad. I mean,
no,
it
wasn't terrible. No, it wasn't horrendous. Right. I'm just saying I got nothing out of that match like the others. I even got something out of Kurt and right. Kane.
Yeah,
But just like WrestleMania 30 on Sunday night.
Well, see, the more I think about it, though, and after we did our show Monday on 30, I want to say 30 is like the next step. It's in the template of this show, but not... equatable to this show. Like, I think 30 top to bottom had better in-ring matches than this. But I think the idea is the same. I think one big moment in match is what makes it really memorable. And I think if a couple of these undercard matches were better, or if Triple H Jericho was hotter, then there was no Daniel Bryan to save them in the main event of this show, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Right. True.
Triple H just wasn't that over. So let me ask you this quick before we wrap, because I want to get going here. Should Steve Austin or Kurt Angle have won the world title at No Way Out? Is this card remembered differently if Steve Austin is your world champion coming in? And we get him versus Triple H for the title.
Well, the match would have been fucking awesome. I mean, it's not a knockout Jericho, but you've got history there.
Does that split Triple H's pop, though? Too much.
Maybe.
You're not going to turn Austin heel again. So no. What if you have Angle be that guy?
What if Angle gets Triple H? You think he would have brought more? You think he would have generated more heel heat than Jericho did?
We saw the match at No Way Out. It was kind of shiesty.
I don't think the opponent was the problem. It was the build. Yeah. Angle would have done the same thing. The fucking dog and the shampoo.
Yeah, no, you're right,
shit.
Right.
The same thing would have happened.
Yeah. I think Austin Triple H
would have been funnier.
Right.
Because Kurt, I think, and that's not a knock on Jericho's sense of humor, but sometimes Jericho doesn't show it as much in his stuff, particularly when he's a heel, as Kurt does. Jericho more shows his humor when he's a face. Kurt's funny either way.
Right.
So
I think
would have been more entertaining, but I think he still would have got neutered.
I think Austin Triple H is the only match that probably could have survived Hogan Rock.
Maybe.
I think that's about it. A lot of empty matches. I'd say a middle of the road WrestleMania with an all-time memorable moment. One of the greatest WrestleMania matches of all time. And a great crowd. Very good commentary. King was reined back in. I thought he did a nice job here. JR was very good. A lot of big stars on this show. Early 02 is a very loaded time in WWF history, card-wise. Not too many bums on the show. There's some odd match choices that we talked about throughout. So, all right, why don't we wrap up, Scott? Another WrestleMania in the books.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be back Monday night. We're going to draft. We're going to look at the draft from March of 02 that came right up after the show. As part of that, Scott, we're going to do a little redrafting of our own. We'll talk about that on Monday.
Yep.
A little twist to that show, and then it's a courtesy of Stephen Sutton gave us that idea.
Yes, he did.
Next Wednesday, episode 7 of the Kevin Kelly Show, episode 7 of the main event.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have an extra point this weekend?
We do have an extra point this weekend. Yes, we do have an extra
point. The extra point will be up next week as well. We'll talk about that on Monday.
Yep.
And then the week after, we have Backlash and a couple other things down the pike. So, we've got to wrap up. That's Scott. I am Justin. WrestleMania in the books, 30 and 18. Everyone have a great weekend. Hope you enjoyed the output from PTB. And keep coming back to PlaceToBeNation.com. As always, bring your feedback. Bring your notes. Bring your comments. We appreciate all of them on Facebook and Twitter. So for Scott, I am Justin. We'll see you Monday night at the draft.
Lucy.
So what's your dog name?
I'm not going anywhere with that.
Tara.
The rogue. Lucy shit on the rogue.